Here we go. Liam and Vinny, my Hello. Savage friends from Mother England.
Thank you for having us back.
Good to see you again, man. What's happening? How's it been?
All sorts of things are going on, Joe. All sorts of things.
Birthday boy over here as well. 50 today.
Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you, sir.
You don't look a day over 49 and a half. Looking good.
Fucking feel it.
Jesus. I feel it. I pulled a muscle in my leg bowling last night.
Oh, no.
Bad news, man.
When you're a world kickboxing champion, you pull a muscle bowling.
It's pathetic, isn't it? It's pathetic.
I'm
looking at myself in the mirror this morning when I got up, thought, you are a loser, mate. What have you done?
Worst neck injuries I ever got was in the shower.
I was just turning to get my
shampoo, yeah. Just like that. I'm like, ah, fuck. Just pop. Look at that. Knocked over Roy McDonald and Bruce Lee with my shenanigans, my antics. Yeah, that's a bummer, man. Bowling,
mate, yeah. The thing is, well, I felt it. I thought, I've done myself in here, but I can't lose the game. And I carried on. At least I won the game.
Well, imagine if, like, you had a workout and your trainer was like, okay, we're going to do some bowling. You're like, how the fuck? This isn't even an effort.
I won't mind yesterday morning. I did some hard round sparring. I've got a little black eye from it and stuff. Clinching, running, fine.
No problems.
Bowling.
Well, maybe it was like some residual stiffness.
Do you know what? We've been driving around a lot. Schedule's been hectic, so we've had seminars and stuff going over. We've been sat in the car a lot, so my hips have been stiff. So I think it was to do with that, to be honest, because it's right up here on my hip where I'm
doing myself. Man, that's legit. That's a big deal. Like, when I come out of here, like, when I just get up after sitting in the chair for 5 hours, everything feels weird. You know,
I wake up sore, stretch. I wake up as if I've been fucking beat up. I don't know what's that about.
I don't know. What are you doing?
Nightmare demons.
What have you been up to?
I don't know. I've been asleep.
What's that?
I've been asleep, so I don't know. You've been asleep? No. Every time I wake up, I'm like, fucking hell in the morning, so I don't know what goes on. Part of me feet, me hips, whatever.
Yeah, but you're 50. I get it. With him, I don't get it.
Yeah, no.
You're supposed to be. He's in his prime.
Yeah, we've had about 300 fights, aren't you? Or something fucking
that's
crazy.
True, too.
Kicking fuck out of people.
The craziest fucking record ever is probably Lomachenko, right? Because didn't he only have one loss in the amateurs?
398 wins?
Something crazy like
397.
That. 397 wins, one loss.
Yeah, which he reversed twice. Yeah.
And then one loss in the pros.
Yeah.
He's obviously not taking too much damage either because of his style, but even making weight 398 times making weight and stuff, that takes it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Being on a diet for that long and just being that strict for that long, it's impressive that.
Well, as he's moving up, he's not cutting as much, though.
Yeah,
like in
true.
His third weight class. This is his third weight class, right?
What they're on about him moving down as well.
What is his? He's going up and down?
Yeah. That's what Bob Arum said.
What is, but his last fight against the Englishman, what is his name? Connolly?
Luke Campbell.
Campbell.
I was there.
It was a great fight.
Yeah.
That kid's good.
He put a really good account of himself because most people in England had wrote him off before it even started.
Everyone wrote him off. I mean, you fight Lomachenko.
To be fair, the second time he went down as well, he didn't have to get back up because he'd already put a really good account of himself by that point.
Yeah.
And to get back up, finish the fight, and finish strong, he were impressive.
No, he's unquestionably that kid's a warrior. I was impressed with his use of distance. I mean, he gave Lomachenko some problems until Lomachenko figured out the timing and how to get inside of him and...
Yeah, he did. He's big for that weight as well.
Andy knows how to box. He was a gold medalist himself, so he was impressive. I was there, and then Lomachenko turned and I felt like he looked at me.
Did you feel like that? You feel like a little fangirl?
Yeah, I just went, yeah, well, you know what I'm like. Hello!
Yeah, I bet he wasn't looking at you.
I bet it weren't. In my world, he was, and you can't say that.
Does it help you at all to think that he was looking at you?
Yes.
What do you get out of that?
It was a 4-hour car ride, and I was in the A&E that morning because I injured myself. I had to go to the A&E in the morning.
What's the A&E?
Accident and emergency.
Oh, okay, that's some English shit.
Yeah. So we had to go there, and but all the way there, I was thinking, I can't not.
How'd you get injured?
Doing weights. Doing some weights shit and pulled my groin here. So I was like hopping about. And then the nurse at the gym at Four Corners, I was going to train that morning. She said, you better go to A&E. So I did.
So what was wrong with you?
So it's touch and go. I just strained my groin here. Wasn't fun at all.
But you're better now?
Yes, sir.
So it couldn't have been that big a deal.
But in my world,
that fight
don't
was like
forget,
2 weeks ago.
I'm not a black belt in jiu-jitsu and I'm not an 8-time world champion. I'm a natural coward.
So any little pull, just
straight to the doctors.
That's one thing about socialized medicine, that you guys have free healthcare.
Yes.
You don't have to worry. You just go show up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, last time though, when you were on and you told me to do a bit of hot yoga, you said.
Yes.
I did it. Yeah. I've just started recently. My girlfriend started doing it. I've just started doing a bit with her. Mate, fuck me. That is like the hardest shit I've ever done in my life. And you said last time, have a joint and go do it. It's amazing. I had a few like Blassant Vape last night, and I just melted into the bed. I couldn't do that and then go do that. No way.
Yeah, you could. Once you get in there, it's crazy. It seems like you can't, but I love to get high and do it because it's like I feel everything. I know I'm in tune. I get like 100% transmission from all muscle fibers.
Well, the thing is as well, though, like the beginners all go at the back, so I went at the back, and there's like some little old guy with me. I thought, I'll be fucking cool next to this guy. It's all right. I won't humiliate myself. And he's bending around, doing it all perfect, and I'm meant to have good balance. I've had 115 fights, so if I should have good balance, I'm stood there shaking on one leg, and it's like going, don't stop, don't stop. And you're not stopping until he stops, mate. It took about 45 minutes in, and I was just like shaking all over. I had to stop before.
It's fucking hard, man. It's fucking hard. Serious. Those old ladies make you feel stupid.
Yeah. 100%.
It's one of those things where people look at it like it's some relaxing thing. It's one of the most underestimated activities you can do in terms of like the amount of stress and strain that's required. It's fucking hard.
You know what? I've never sweat like it in my life either. Even when I've been in a sauna to lose weight for a fight and stuff, I've never sweat like that. I went, must have gone for about five of them easily.
Yeah. I bring a 64-gallon, or gallon. liters? No, that doesn't make any sense. What would it be?
Ounces.
Is that it?
Yeah.
64 ounces of water. Yeah, like a hydro flask. I bring a big one, and I just fill it up with ice and water, and I just fucking drink the thing the entire time. And I make sure I drink a shitload of water on the way over there, too. You're just pouring water. But they did a study recently, a Harvard study. There's one of them they're doing right now where they're trying to see if the same effects from hot yoga you get from the sauna. Like, if it's very similar, because sauna does, you know, it's like 40% decrease across all causes of mortality, heart attack, strokes. With people that regularly do the sauna, I think they consider it 4 days a week. They have, like, incredible results, like, health-wise, because of the reduction of inflammation. Because when you're in that heat, it just really reduces inflammation across your whole body. Yeah. They think that that's going on when you're doing yoga because your body heats up so much. Because even though it's only 104 degrees in there, when you're fucking sweating at 104 degrees and holding those poses and shaking, like your body temperature has got to be through the roof.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. The only thing that saved me on that day, my friend came with me as well, and he's a big guy. He's like 6'5". So I knew that every time I was struggling, I looked across and he was fucked. So fuck for that.
Oh, yeah, big giant people. You don't realize how badly out of balance your body is if you're a weightlifter until you do yoga. Like, especially those dudes with little toothpick legs and a big meatball body. Yeah. You know those guys?
Yeah.
That's a fucked up body for yoga, man. Just fall forward.
Yeah, you got no chance.
Yeah, it's like a car with a giant engine and skinny back tires. You're just sliding all over the place.
Like these.
It's just, but I think for athletes, it's one of the very best things to keep your entire body balanced, to keep it in tune.
I was speaking to someone and he was saying, how long do you want to fight for? And I said, I want at least another 3-4 years out of myself yet. I said, I still feel good at minute. He said, but I am getting injured more. So he said, serious, I know you've been told to do it. He said, just to do it. He said, you will get another 4 or 5 years out, maybe it'll help just so much. And I walked out the room, I was dead, but I felt amazing about 10 minutes after.
Yeah, no, it's great for you. And it's also for a kickboxer, like your coordination and your ability to have a full range of motion.
Yeah, mobility,
so important.
Flexibility, everything.
Yeah, head kicks, you know. You want that flexibility. You want it to be looser so you can let those babies fly.
Yeah, I'm head kicks are really my specialty anyway. I'm more of a leg kick type of guy. But,
but every now and then.
Yeah, you never know.
It's
good
to let one
go. Surprise a few people every now and then.
How was your knee? I know you had a knee surgery.
Oh, yeah. It's all good now. I did it in Thailand in December.
You got surgery in Thailand?
No, I did the injury in December, and my leg started locking all the time. And I had a fight. Yeah, fuck that. No chance, mate.
You got some crazy-ass staph infection.
Yeah,
right,
no way. So I did the injury in December, just before I was training for a fight in end of January, and my leg started locking, so I didn't really know what it was. So I thought, I'll get the fight out of the way, then I'll go see my specialist, get an MRI, and see what's what. Did the fight, got through the fight, won the fight, didn't throw my left leg once. And I thought, it's all right now. I went back to the gym, I threw one kick, and then my meniscus tore. It got stuck in my knee joint, so my leg locked, like totally bent, so I couldn't walk.
I've had that exact same
injury.
Oh,
my God.
It was crazy
fucking
painful.
Honestly, one of the worst things I've ever felt. I was rolling around the floor like I'd been shot.
Yeah.
I went to the hospital, and I thought, because it was so bad, and I would just say, right, it's my job, they might fast-track me a little bit. Went to the hospital. Oh no, we'll let you see. We'll let you go for an MRI. We'll ring you with an appointment. So I had to go home. I was sat at home for like 4 days before they even rang. I thought, fuck this, I'm going private. So I went private. By the time I'd had an MRI, which told me what it was, and had the surgery. I'd only just got a letter to go have an MRI from the hospital, so they were just going to leave me there for fucking however long. I was sat there watching my leg turn into a toothpick, all muscle wasting away and everything. So
that's the downside of socialized medicine, right? Big lines. Canada, it's rough. I had a friend, she had to wait over a year to get a knee surgery. She had a torn ACL. Over a year with a bad knee, just hobbling around with one, you know, it's...
That's a thing that they just
left
me there.
Good and it's bad, right? It's good and it's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel all ashamed now that I went in with my pulled groin and you and my leg didn't. My leg, was hanging off. I got bit by a shark, whatever.
But yeah, he fought with that.
Yeah, I had the surgery and they said, "Oh, don't." Probably after 12 weeks, you'll be back to full strength. You better start fight training again. I had a fight after 10 weeks.
Wow!
So I did like a full month, just rehab, getting it back to where it was, and then I trained for like 6 weeks for a fight, and I fought on one championship.
I had that exact same injury. It's called a bucket handle tear. Yeah, meniscus. Yeah. Oof. God damn, that's rough.
Honestly, I've never felt like it. Horrendous, man.
Now, when they removed the chunk, is your knee okay now? Did it feel unstable at all, or does it feel sore?
It gets a bit sore because it's just rubbing on bone now, I'm guessing. There's not there.
No,
it's
I'm just, sure there's something there.
Oh, well, that's what it is now. They haven't took the whole thing out, but they're just trimmed away.
You know what helps, man, is if you get some stem cell shot in there. Just make your way down to Panama.
I know you told me that before. You messaged me and said, get down there. Yeah. I might look into it.
I was having real problems with my left knee because that's the one that I had the meniscus tear in. Anytime I had to do anything rigorous, it would start swelling, it would hurt. And then I got one stem cell shot like 5 years ago. It's never bothered me since. Never bothered me since. Yeah.
What about one session? Is it BPC-157 as well? That's like a new peptide type of thing.
I don't think that's for. See, the difference between meniscus and ligaments is that that's more of something that they think is really good for tendons and ligaments.
Right, right.
Yeah. But there's some real promising results.
Yeah. I've heard like people raving about it. Glenn was just telling me about it then. Like one of my friends from home, he uses it on his tendonitis and stuff, and he said it's amazing.
Yeah. Dr. Mark Gordon is using that in his protocols. He's that guy that does a lot of work with traumatic brain injuries and different, you know, people with like pretty significant injuries. And he's found there's some great papers that are being published right now on BPC-157.
There you go, straight into
the
groin, man.
Yeah, it's a peptide. Shoot it into the old groin area, fella.
I've got a limited internal rotation on my left leg anyway, come from kicking. So
limited internal rotation.
Can't internal rotate.
How come? From what?
From kicking.
From kicking?
From left kick.
You tore it doing?
Yeah. I tore it doing CrossFit. I've got a physio, Darren Henlon, an Irish guy, top guy. He's been working on it, but this was like 5%. This was like 5% the strength of that. So that was like...
5%?
Yes, it was fucked.
So this one's 100, this one's 5?
Yeah, this was absolutely fucked. I had like 5% of that. So
but what's the actual injury?
I actually don't know. I've got a tight hip capsule. And I ruptured my hip flexor. That was doing thrusters. But I didn't realise I had one leg shorter than the other. So I've got one leg shorter.
You have one leg shorter than the other?
Like a pirate.
How much difference?
About that much.
Can you put like that much in your shoe and
balance
it out?
Yes, I've got one. I've got one in my shoe. So basically I'm disabled.
Why don't you get your leg pulled on?
I've had a few people when I didn't know what it was. Because he's like,
is it the bones or is it because of the capsule?
Don't know.
A doctor? Why am I asking you these questions?
I haven't got a fucking clue. I just go and see him and he twists it about, causes loads of pain, but it's progressively got better. So
how is fighting in 1FC? Are you enjoying that?
I'm sick, mate.
Is it?
Absolutely. I love it. I'm gutted that it didn't come around earlier. And now I'm like 33 now, so I've only got like 3 or 4 years left. 100% want to finish my career like with those guys and put in a good run with them.
I need to see the event. I hear it's amazing.
So seriously, I've fought all over the world and stuff, and like the production and everything there is absolutely unbelievable. Like your chat tree is a top guy as well.
Now, how do they make the rule sets? Because some fights are with kickboxing gloves, some fights are with MMA gloves.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think when they send you the contract over, you can say, oh, well, I don't want to fight in MMA, will you fight in the kickboxing? So I think it's the management team that get a say in it. Like my manager, Richard, he's always said, no, it's dangerous fighting in MMA gloves. You'll break your hands, you're short in your career. And I'm like, nah, fuck that. I want to do it before I retire. I said, I'm old as shit anyway now for fight-wise. I said, I'm coming towards the end. I said, I want to do it. I remember when I went out as well, first round, I went bang with a jab. I thought, fucking hell, that felt amazing. And then he hit me and I went, whoa. I went, whoa, that wasn't a glove. You were like in Home Alone when Marv gets smashed with iron on his face. That's what I felt like.
How much difference is it with the little glove?
It's weird because obviously the glove's spongy, so that like it wobbles your head a little bit. That was just like a sharp bang, just like a bare knuckle basically, because those one gloves as well, they're tiny. There's not much padding in them whatsoever. But
boxing gloves feel more spongy. Is
that
what you're saying?
Yeah, that when you get it with a boxing glove, it like if you get it on the chin, it wobbles like your whole head because it's such a big surface area to hit. Mm-hmm. Like with those little gloves, hitting you in like one point. Or I got cut like four times on one eye just from. I took like three or four right hands, and every one of them like cut me. So that's how dangerous they are. But I made a stupid mistake in that fight. In Muay Thai with the long gloves, I'll do long guard a lot because it works with the bigger gloves on,
right.
So I can protect myself. I did it once in that fight and got caught with an overhand right on my ear. And balance went. I had to take a knee, got an eight count, came back up, and then I was chasing the fight after that. And then even though round three I absolutely battered him, I cut him bad. And I'd nearly stopped him with leg kicks. It were only a three-round fight. Mm. So I'd lost one round 10-8. So first round were even. Second round him 10-8. Third round I battered him. But it was too late by then. So one mistake in them gloves. And it is...
That's interesting that it makes you reassess your defense, right?
Yeah.
Because your defense is dependent. Like, you see a lot of guys like Botter. Like, Botter always fought like this with his hands, like with those earmuffs.
The first thing I did as well, like, when I was training to do it, I was sparring with him just to get used to it. And I put my fucking hands shut like in a glove I would. And I did that. Mm-hmm. And someone kicked me. And the fucking knuckle stuck in my head like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be fucking torture trying to get used to putting your hands flat and more head movement and stuff like that. But I did that. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to fight for him again.
What did you think when they had that bare knuckle boxing event, Paulie Malignaggi fought Artem Levin?
Lobov.
Sorry. That's one of the more interesting cases because you've got a guy in Paulie Malignaggi who's a legitimate world champion and world class boxer, you know, a few years past his prime and hasn't really been fighting.
Yep.
But then you see him fight a guy like Artem Lobov who's used to fighting with MMA gloves. There's not much of a difference fighting bare knuckle. And Blovov actually
won,
beating him in a decision, which nobody fucking saw coming.
No.
And Paulie's not a puncher anyway, is he? So to go into that against a guy that's naturally bigger as well.
But you would have still thought...
I still thought he'd done enough
known enough. You know, like a guy like Roy Jones Jr., you're not outboxing him. You know what I'm saying? Like if some... It's just like... A world-class boxer, you would imagine, even if he's
a few little tricks just to get
him. He's still going to fuck you up. Yeah. He's just going to make the adjustments.
Yeah.
I wonder how he trained for it.
God knows. No idea.
You know what I mean? Did he box with bare knuckles?
He broke his hand in second round as well, didn't he, straight away?
And he broke it bad because a few weeks ago, because he's a pundit for Sky TV and the boxing, and he had his hand still in plaster or whatever it was then, so it must have been a bad.
Mm.
And he's very left-handed as well, isn't he? I think he had a bad... Right hand. They never chuck right hands really anyway. Did he was always left hand anyway, wasn't he? Hand
down wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a lot of like combinations exchange, but that's the case with most of those bare knuckle fights. It's a totally different thing.
Yeah, it's getting big in England that now as well. Like the BKB thing, like they're having big shows, filling out big arenas. I think they've got me down in London at O2 and stuff now. One of my friends fought on it recently. It's like getting a really big name for itself.
Well, people like the least rules
violence
the least rules possible, they like it, you know, like Lethwei or anything along those lines. You know, the headbutts with Lethwei, I mean, they take it to another level, right?
Yeah, that's crazy shit. Yeah, that one. Yeah,
when
crazy
the guy
shit.
Come over to England, did some seminars and that with, and he was headbutting pads and all.
David Ledoux,
probably.
I'm coming on the podcast soon. I was a big proponent of no gloves with MMA. I was like, well, if you don't have gloves on your shins and your knees and your elbows, why the fuck do you have them on your knuckles?
Yeah,
I changed my mind.
But the thing is,
those cuts.
That's the two worst things. I got cut four times on one eye and my hands after the fight.
Yeah,
because we had like a bit of a war, and I just started swinging all over the place in round three, trying to KO him. I wasn't really picking my shots properly like I should have been. I've got bad problems with this one. I've got a metal plate with this one. The day after I flew back to England, I went to the gym, I put the gloves on just to try and hit the pads, and I couldn't even make a fist properly for about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Swelling?
It felt like all my wrists, like tendons and stuff around here, I couldn't squeeze a fist properly. It were awful, but that was my own stupid fault. For like when I was chasing the fight, I wasn't picking my shots properly. I was just swinging around, hitting top of his head and trying to KO him. And
it was fucking good, though.
Yeah,
it was fucking great.
Well, I loved it when I was in there doing it. It was just there. But yeah, it is exciting. One mistake, it's going to change the fight, you know what I mean? Which is, I've learned that now as well. So,
well, we've seen that with, you know, MMA fighters, with really top flight kickboxers like Gokhan Saki. When Gokhan Saki fought Khalil Roundtree, and Khalil just cracked him with one left hand and dropped him. It's like, it's a different world with those little gloves.
100%.
I mean, you thought Gokhan Saki, man, he is one of the elite of the elite in kickboxing. He's in MMA. If anybody's going to beat him, it's going to be on the ground.
You don't expect anyone to knock him out.
Anybody can get caught with those little gloves.
Like I said as well, I did like long guard like that, which was just, it was stupid. I trained the whole time as well not to do that. and
instincts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You go back to what feels comfortable, don't you? And it cost me.
That's one of the craziest things about fighting, right? Is that you train for years and years and years, and then you have this style, and you try to make adjustments during the fight. But as soon as things get crazy,
you go back to what you know.
You go right back.
Yeah,
that's why I always felt like it's definitely worse to learn things wrong and then relearn them than to not learn anything at all then start with a blank slate.
Yeah.
Like if you could teach someone and they were 25 and they had no martial arts experience whatsoever versus teach someone and they have 5 years of some bullshit.
Yeah.
That 5 years of some bullshit is going to be in their head.
Like, yeah, muscle memory, and you've got to iron it out, haven't you?
That's why we get a lot of people come to the gym as well, have done karate for years.
Yes.
And then you try and teach them how to kick like the Thai way, and you just can't do it. You take over and over and over.
Yeah.
Because they've been taught that way for so long, it's just so difficult to get them out of that old habit.
You know, some guys were effective even with the karate way, like because the amount of power they could generate. Like Krokop was a great example.
Yeah.
He kicked karate style, but the fucking power that guy could generate.
Yeah, that head kick.
Yeah. Oof, oh my God.
Disgraceful, man.
The body kicks. Do you remember that there's a fucking picture when he kicked Heath Herring? It is, till this day, one of the most... To this day!
Deontay Wilder. I was just thinking that.
That guy owns that expression forever.
Yeah, exactly.
To this day!
When he took his glasses off, I was
oh my God, I got terrified. I wasn't even in the room and I got scared. But there's a shot of Krokop with his shin halfway into Heath Herring's body. Look at this picture.
Yeah.
Dude.
That's a big old leg to be ripping through you as
Dude.
Well.
Dude. Oh my God. That fucking body shit. Who's that? Jesus Christ. I don't know who that is, but that's horrific.
Is that a head kick as well there? That's landing on his head.
Yeah. I don't think that's the one with Heath Herring. The one with Heath Herring is that's it. Upper left hand corner. That's it. That's it.
Oh, that's full shin. That one.
Yeah, look at that one.
Oh.
Look at that one. Oh my God, go full screen on that. Look at the fucking penetration. That is horrific, and that's all liver, son.
Liver.
That is all liver.
His arms, back, and everything.
Oh my God, that guy could generate so much force with that left kick. It's insane. But that one right there, I mean, fucking A.
Yeah, nah.
The most horrific body shot I've ever seen in all of MMA.
Yeah, it's not even foot; it's full shin as well.
Full shin. For perfect. Just, it's like a textbook. But he, again, karate style.
Yeah.
Initially,
When you've got it down to an art to fight like that as well, you can mix and match with the style.
Yes.
When you're as gifted as he were as well.
Kyokushin karate, the knockdown karate, isn't it? Is it Kyokushin?
I don't know if he had a Kyokushin background. I know he had a traditional martial art background when he got into kickboxing. Mm. But see, here's a good example of a guy who made that transition well into MMA because he was so explosive. Whereas there's other guys, like if you had a guy like Peter Ertz, who wasn't as explosive, he wasn't, like, he was more of a technician and methodical, or Ernesto Hoost, they probably wouldn't have had the same sort of success in MMA as Mirko did.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, remember when Ernesto fought Bob Sapp?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, lost that one, didn't he?
Twice. Yeah. He got stopped by him. Yeah. He couldn't keep him off of him. Where Mirko fucking murked him.
Yeah.
Mirko.
If he were going to do that in MMA, a wrestler trying to grab hold of him, he'd be done money, do you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, exactly. You need to have that. Mirko had that explosiveness that those guys didn't have. It's interesting how, like, so many variables change what a fight is. No gloves versus gloves changes what a fight is, changes your ability to defend yourself. And then, you know, whether or not there's takedowns or grappling. Like, that's one thing about kickboxing versus Muay Thai. It's like people say, well, I like kickboxing because it's more action, because you can't clinch. I'm like, but
you're not going to get fucking elbowed straight in the face.
Yeah, and the knees to the body and from the clinch, and trying to escape from the clinch is an art in itself. And
it depends who it is. I mean, now that the generic just Dutch style, like your Ertz, Carmen, and Ernesto Hoost, now the Dutch style's changed, especially the Moroccans. The guy that's training Badahari now, Saeed El Badoui, different style altogether.
How so?
They use more leg kicks and throw knees up the middle. They're really quick with knees now.
Yeah, they are dangerous.
They're a lot more
dangerous. They can knees in their face.
And they'll hook you in the body and then the right knee up your middle. It's just a different angle altogether. It's like the attack with more sort of more of eclectic mix of stuff, you know?
This gentleman who's training Badahari, who has he trained before?
Ilyas Belaid. who's a fantastic fighter. Yeah. He's signed for Bellator. He's from Enfusion. He trained Melvin for his last fight. Melvin looked good in his last fight.
He did look good in his last fight. Yes, sir, him, yeah, so. I mean, a lot of people thought Melvin was done.
Yeah, I really like, and he's a good guy as well. He's from El Otmani gym. Nordin El Otmani was a good coach as well. He's got some good fighters. But there's these kids that you don't get to see because I'm in Enfusion, who I work for, they have like an Enfusion talent, so I see all the new kids coming through, and they are fucking lethal, these Moroccans.
Yeah, the Dutch Moroccan boys, yeah, the
Nabil Harouli.
Scary, some of them.
Yeah, Nabil Harouli, Tyson, you've seen him, like him.
It's a wild group of people. Those Dutch Moroccans.
Yeah, they're wild. Dangerous, man.
They're dangerous, you know.
It's so wild. You know, and that's like Badr Hari. That's his whole deal, you know. He's just this wild, technical guy.
He looks
Rico. He's fighting Rico.
Yeah.
Rematch with Rico, that's a tough fight for him.
Of course it is,
And Rico is so active.
Yeah, for how long he's had out as well.
Yeah.
How long has he been out? 2 years, 3 years? Or so.
He's broke been out since... Yeah, but Rico was calling bullshit. Rico said he just wanted out of the fight. When Rico was on the podcast, he's like, you look at him, he goes, he looks at one elbow, and then he changes his mind and looks at the other.
Yeah, I watched that. Yeah
he said he wanted out. He said he wanted out. He was getting fucked up.
Yeah.
And he said he knew that I was tuning him up, you know? And... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that's also Rico trying to fuck with him.
Yeah.
Getting his head.
100%.
But, it's like, I would have loved to see Badr have a few fights and get real sharp. He had, like, one, right? Yeah. Didn't he have one? Didn't he fight? He fought Hedzi, right?
Yeah, he fought Hedzi Gürges, yeah.
Who else did he fight? Did he fight one other person?
I think he fought Lund.
Do me a favor and pull up Badr Hari's.
He fought Lund as well.
He didn't fight anybody else, just Hedzi?
Just Hedzi Gürges. But he fought Lund. That was the last fight in Lund since he did his stretch on holiday.
So Hedzi, Rico, he hasn't fought since? Oh, that's Glory, bro.
Yeah,
that's
but
the Glory
in Glory,
record.
But
he's
not in
Glory.
He did fight
Ishmael Lund. Pull up his Wikipedia record. His Wikipedia record, he's definitely had at least one fight since.
Yeah, Lund it was.
Yeah. I think he's had two.
Somewhere, I don't know.
I think he fought Hedzi again. Did he fight Hedzi again? That makes sense?
He fought Hedzi, the first time he fought him, I was commentating because he kicked him in the face, didn't he, on the floor?
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago,
he
and it's showtime.
Right? Yeah. Okay, what has he got? Okay, so he did fight Hedzi.
Yeah, that is Ishmael Lund,
So that was he had a no contest against Hedzi, the last fight? What is that? It says decision unanimous. Yeah, why does it say no contest?
Is that where
did someone test positive?
When did he kick him on the floor?
And it's showtime.
Look at this. It says decision unanimous, but it says result no contest. Oh, what the fuck is that?
In blue as well. I've never seen that.
Yeah, can you click on that? What does it say?
PDs. Oh, right, yeah.
Both fighters tested positive. Let him go. Why are you testing Badr Hari? Just look at his Instagram. That's enough. You should just give him a suspension based on his Instagram. Like, listen, bro. He's jacked. I mean, go to Badr Hari's Instagram. He's about as shredded as like a professional fighter as ever.
Yeah, he's in ridiculous shape, isn't he?
So with this Rico fight, are they going to test him? I wonder.
Don't know.
Look at him. Wow. Shredded. Shredded. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously in incredible physical condition. But the thing, like, look at him. Dude, look at that fucking picture. Get
fucking
the
hell.
Fuck out of here, man. Come on, son. He's on all the Mexican supplements. All of them. He should be wearing a sombrero in that picture. Looking good, Badr. I'm really excited about that fight.
When
please
is that
don't
fight?
Test them. I think it's in December.
I think it's December 12th.
Yeah, please don't test them. Just stop, Glory. Stop testing people. Let it go.
But Saeed is a good coach, and he's some really good coaches in Holland. Like Osama El Gaoui, really good coaches, man. And it's just different pad style. You know, old Dutch style was right hand to the head, left up to the body, leg kick, left up, leg kick. You know, high kick and leg kick, high kick. But these guys are really, it's a lot intricate.
These guys now are all like pro boxers who've been taught a few kicks and knees. They're fucking that good with their hands. Yeah, they're amazing with their hands.
Do you think that is the way to go, or but look at the success that a lot of the Thai guys have had in Glory.
Yeah, they have,
You know, I mean...
Like City Chai and five guys like that. They've been dominating.
Yeah.
I think it's because a lot of the time, when they have a class, they all train the same. I think they lead off the lead hand a lot. And I think it's very difficult with a southpaw, heavy kicker Thai who can step off.
So do you think it's a southpaw
issue?
It's
honestly, I think southpaw style is a completely different game altogether.
For sure, but what about when it's southpaw-southpaw?
I think what the Thais are good at is a lot of the Dutch fighters, the fighting rhythms, so it's like they're bouncing with the feet in and out, in and out, and then they explode into the combination. Fighters like Sitichai and Superbon and guys like that, they're so good at breaking your rhythm and timing, little off-balancing stuff. It keeps putting them out of their rhythm, then they're scoring with their shots, stepping off and stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, they're so good. Like, even something like a little teep to front leg, you know, it'll just stop them subtly for a minute. They'll kick them hard, score, and they'll move. And they're always having to reset themselves, which I don't think the Dutch are used to, really. Because when they're fighting other Dutch or Moroccans, they're standing in front of each other.
Right.
You go, I go, you go, I go. And they're just having a complete war. Like, something subtle like that, what the Thais are doing, it's like just breaking their rhythm and they're able to score.
Mm-hmm. The trouble is as well, though, there's a flip side to it, because a lot of Thais start very slowly. You can't do that with these kids. Because these Moroccans fight like you've nicked something off them, don't they?
Yeah, they fight every week as well. They get to like 23, they've had 100 fights.
And the sparring's just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. You've seen it, haven't you? They just knock fuck out of each other, but they just...
They're in a fight in 16-ounce gloves like twice a week.
Mm. That just seems like they're limiting their future.
They are, a lot of them. They don't get past like 26, 27 a lot, do they?
Not really. I mean?
Just from impact.
Just impact and just going for it, I suppose.
We've seen that with so many fighters.
I think there's a different sort of... I think they have a more ingrained, especially the Moroccans, they have a more ingrained sort of, they refuse to lose anything, I think it's sort of massive pride thing.
But the problem is, like, they love fighting, right? Yeah. Well, you're fucking yourself over and you're going to limit your ability to fight for long periods of time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
I've done that, like, the older I've got, I've changed my training up. We used to spar hard quite a lot of bad company. We don't do that hardly. Well, I don't myself. Maybe once a week, head guards on, just... hard boxing sparring, but I don't do any hard kick sparring at all anymore.
Really?
I used to, no.
How come?
I just don't want to save myself. I don't want to injure myself.
Is it knees? You worried about your knees?
Yeah, a little bit. And even just picking up knocks now, the order I've got is harder to shake off. I don't think I need to do any hard kick sparring now. Like, I can play spar and it still gets my eyes working. As long as I've done some good boxing sparring, hard boxing sparring with the head guards on, with James France, who's one of our top fighters, and he's a really good boxer. If I can hold my own with him, I know I'm ready to fight.
What is the difference in the amount of damage you take with hard kick sparring versus hard boxing sparring?
The thing is, when you start going hard in sparring, especially with how competitive we all are at my gym, because lots of top-level fighters there, they start going hard, and the tighter you get, say you get to around 6-7, you miss a kick, you kick an elbow, you kick a knee, you do stupid shit, then you've hurt your foot, and then bang knees, you've clasped knees and stuff like that. When I was younger, I can just check them injuries off, don't matter, I'll spar again tomorrow. But the older I've got, I don't want to even put myself in a position where I need to do that. I don't feel like I need to anymore anyway. I've worked out that play sparring, like, not like 50% sparring, it's just as good. It still gets your eyes working. It's still doing all the same things. I'm just not getting hurt.
Well, the Thais really have that down.
Yeah, they do.
It's such a wise thing that they learned. You know, and when you see guys like Sanchai, when he's sparring, it's like he's just slapping.
Well, when I go to Thailand, touching. I train with him at that same gym, and that's all he does. As soon as I get there, he'll call me in the ring, no shin pads, just a play spar.
Yeah.
He'll fucking humiliate me, but I learned so much in about 3 minutes off him and stuff like
play
that.
Play to learn, don't they? The thing is, do that as well, the Cubans, when they box, they don't punch fuck out of each other either.
Well, that's also jiu-jitsu. Yeah. I mean, Henner Gracie, his whole thing was always keep it playful.
Mm.
You tell people, you want to learn jiu-jitsu, want to get really good, be playful. Don't be fucking stiff and tense. Just flow. You get caught. It's play. You're playing
a
game.
That's part of it,
right? If you're playing basketball and someone scores on you, it's not the end of the world.
Exactly.
You know, a ball goes in the... Like, you don't get to your knees and start crying. But if you get caught in an arm bar, it's like your life is over. It's not. You got caught.
Mm.
You know, if you don't think the guy who's you're sparring with can catch you, you're sparring with the wrong people.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, if you're fucking tapping everybody, either you're Hicks and Gracie and you're just so good, you're better than everybody else, or you're sparring with people that are not challenging you. Yeah. It's really that simple.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is as well, like what happens is like on a Friday at our gym, like the whole gym will like be changing partners and stuff like that. So if I come across someone who's a bit less experienced and stuff, and they're going hard and they're not too sure about what they're doing, and you end up getting hurt. Like, so that's why I took myself out of that and don't really do it anymore.
Yeah, that's a wise thing, man. It's wise, and I really wish more young fighters would appreciate that early in their career, because I think so many of them are compromised by the time they get to the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know, by the time they get to Bellator or MMA with the UFC or, you know, even kickboxing guys, by the time they get to big fights, they've already been dinged up too much.
Yeah,
they can't take a shot anymore.
Yeah, 100%. I've seen that loads recently as well. Like, fighters who are like 27, 28 should be just starting the prime now for the next 4 or 5 years, and they're already punchy as fuck. You know what I mean?
I think you said an interesting thing. Sorry. No. Usyk. Alexander Usyk.
Yes.
You know, I'm boring, and I'm always watching fights, even if it's in, you know, Russian and reading the subtitles. And there's one about Alexander.
You're saying he's boring?
No, I'm boring. I just sit there watching fights all the time. That's just what I do. But there's a video of Usyk, and he was saying about now people aren't moving the feet. He said, you watch the American styles and the British, they're all like doing this and the Philly shell and stuff like that. They're not moving the feet anymore, which I found was really interesting, because if you look, the footwork is, their footwork is so superior to other people's.
Him and Lama,
when he fought Tony Bellew, put up a great performance against him, but he just put him in a position, and the end of it, he was fucked.
Yeah, not many people realised what he'd actually done either as well. He'd put him there and he were waiting and waiting and waiting, and when he got him there, he knew he couldn't get out, and he bang. Yeah.
It would have been amazing if we got a chance to see Floyd versus Loma Floyd was in his prime.
Yeah.
That would have been fucking incredible to see which style superior.
Yeah.
Because Floyd would move towards you like this. He would just get right up on you.
And he'll be trying to like move on the back of him and stuff like that. It would have been amazing.
But you said that, like, I think it was one that when you said he was talking to someone where he was... Mayweather, Floyd, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Money Mayweather. It's like two different fighters, really.
Yeah.
Because Money Mayweather, Pretty Boy Floyd was better on his, was more on his feet, sharper on his
more
feet,
more aggressive.
Yeah, more aggressive as well.
He were a fighter,
especially with them right hands when he fought Philippe Andouille, hitting with like six right hands, like bang,
yeah, and
bang,
what he did to Gatti and stuff like that. He
went right up to the body. Yeah. The right
God, that was a horrific massacre. Man.
Yeah,
it was bad. Really, I remember watching that. I was only young as well when I watched that. I remember thinking, "Fucking hell,
he's a right beating,
bad." Yeah,
I mean, he was executing him.
Yeah, badly.
No desire. I mean, no business being in the ring with him.
No.
But just show you how good Floyd really is.
Yeah, he's awesome.
You know,
awesome.
I mean, people just, because of the fact that he's won decisions by, you know, playing it safe, people that just don't get excited about him and they recognize him with the all-time greats. He's the best ever.
Yeah, I believe so.
Well, look what he did with Canelo.
Yeah.
I mean, he absolutely schooled him.
Shut him down.
Yeah. He just absolutely
changed Canelo's style.
Yeah, he did.
You look at the 100% way Canelo fight Daniel Jacobs. Fucking so much head movement and so elusive now.
Yeah.
I mean, he learned.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. What do you think about Canelo going up and fighting Kovalev? Kind of crazy.
You know what?
So big.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'm rubbish at predicting fights. I am. I watch
You're
all
rubbish
the time.
At predicting fights. For Americans, that means he's not good.
Sorry, I'm terrible. Terrible about that.
He's
sorry
rubbish.
No, I'm really bad at predicting fights. We have a boxing group on WhatsApp, the boxing thing it's called, and I always get it wrong.
You guys use WhatsApp. That is such a fucking British thing.
No one
in America uses WhatsApp.
We have groups.
No one knows what the fuck that is.
And I think the key for Kovalev is his jab. I think the thing is, everyone thinks that he's easy to hit to the body, but Andre Ward was amazing and slipping underneath that jab. Mm-hmm. He was so good at that. He's just a king amongst normal people.
Well, he was tested in his last fight. What's that dude's
Anthony
name?
Yard.
Anthony Yard.
In round eight, he was gone in round eight.
Yes.
Yeah, he did well to recover
he
from
got
that. To be fair,
fucking tagged in round eight. I mean, it looked bad. It looked like he was a couple punches away from being stopped.
Yeah,
saved by Belly, but 20 more seconds, he might have gone.
I think it's getting him at the right time.
Yeah.
But Kovalev's still in it with his jab. He's better now with Buddy McGirt because he beat Alvarez after that. After he got lost to Alvarez and he fought Alvarez again and he looked great. But against Yard, eight.
Yard is massive as well compared to Canelo.
But he still didn't have enough experience.
No.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
He had 18 fights, 18 knockouts.
Yeah.
Just wiped floor with everyone. Never been in that deep water, never been at world level. And he put in a good account of himself,
He'll be dangerous as fuck after that fight.
Yes.
He's going to learn from that experience and understand, like, wow, his conditioning is probably a little off.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs to lose a little bit of muscle mass.
Yeah, he's massive,
maybe he needs to put in more running. Mm. But goddamn, he's good. He's scary.
He
powerful kid.
Yeah.
Really powerful.
Very powerful.
You know, I mean, even Crusher said it afterwards. He's like, this guy's a future champion, for sure.
And I felt sorry for his coach, because his coach is not, you know, a lot of people, they find him unsavory in many ways, because he's what he says and stuff, because he said a few things about, he said his skill level was better than Andre Ward's, which is nonsense, no way.
He said Yard's skill level was better than Andre?
Yeah, he said that.
That's
and then and Ward was like, well, there's a bit of back and two between them. But, I do think it's a little bit unfair that he got so much shit. But then again, if you say stuff, people are going to hear it and want to give it you back. So.
Yeah, you're true.
But I think Yard's definitely a future champion. But it's a hard division.
Oh yeah, man.
Turviev, what's the other guy called? He's another Russian. And they're fighting a unification fight soon.
It's all Russian.
Yeah, it's a Russian division.
I had Andre Ward on, and we were talking about it. Like, look at the division. It's fucking Russian. Yeah. It's crazy.
100%. Yeah.
And then Usyk is going up to
heavyweight.
Heavyweight.
Yeah. Who are you fighting?
Fighting Tyrone Spong.
Yeah, Spong. Yes. Yeah, he's fighting Spong.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. I That's a big step up for
yeah.
Spong.
Yeah, he's going to be a bit too smart, I reckon, Usyk, but Spong won't be afraid to fucking throw down, will he? So.
He's dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Spong's if he tags dangerous. Him, mate, he's, yeah. he can bank at it. So. Yeah.
Left hook especially. He's left, I think and he's a left-handed.
He won't be afraid to just fucking go at him either. So.
Yeah, well, he won his last fight by split decision, though, in Suriname.
All right.
Yeah, so I don't know who he fought.
I think he fought again.
Tyrone did?
Yeah, only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I think it was based on... Because I messaged you, didn't I, saying I've heard it's Tyrone Spong, and then I think he
the had another fight to sort of keep sharp.
Yeah, but I think I like Tyrone. I remember years ago at Showtime, Tyrone was saying that he said, "Hey man, I want to fight this David Hay.
Yeah,
I fight him, no problem." I don't think the Dutch really have got much respect for boxers because every year the kickboxers and the boxers fight.
I never knew that.
Once a year they fight and. And the kickboxers always win.
Really?
Yeah, they fight boxing rules, and the boxers.
That's what I like.
Lose.
What I was saying about it before. Though, yep. The kickboxers there now are pro boxers who've been shown some kicks and knees, basically.
And they can fight at Southpaw and Orthodox. They just it's a lot from that big. They just chuck stuff about.
Mm. I'm sorry, I got to make a text that I forgot about. Don't keep talking. Keep talking.
Anyway, about me, buddy.
I'm thinking that. With Tyrone Spong, what's interesting is that, you know, he had this really big career as a kickboxer. Mm. He was one of the best.
Yes.
Then he has that fight with Gokhan Saki and snaps his knee,
the
his leg
worst
in half.
Thing I've ever seen, that.
Yeah.
It still gives me nightmares.
I've seen that in person twice.
Yeah, so have I.
Anderson and there was another gentleman that also, Corey Hill. Was it Corey Hill? I think it was Corey Hill. It's just a rough fucking break, man. That's a terrible injury because then you're always going to be thinking you throw it, you know? Yeah,
100%.
And then they also say that when you have those metal plates, a lot, like Paige Van Zandt is dealing with that, like the area where the metal meets the bone, sometimes it compromises that bone. And so it snaps like it's like she's had like, I think, three different surgeries on her forearm. She broke her forearm throwing a spinning back fist and hit somebody in the forehead.
Fucking hell.
That's the way that's the way Paul Felder broke his too. He threw it and, you know, you land like this, like with your forearm instead of your fist, you know, and just your arm snaps.
Thingy, what happened to Savas, Michael Savas?
Oh, he fought Lursula and he got his leg caught and he lifted him up and swept him and he tried to put his hand down and his elbow dislocated and twisted the other way. It was horrendous.
He's a good kid,
yeah,
isn't he?
He's a great fighter, but he's getting back home in Cyprus now recuperating. But yeah, that's a shame that as well, because the kid's 20 years old. He's a massive star in Thailand. They were going to give him a stadium title shot. He's just making a name for himself on one. He'd smashed his first fight, so I think they were in line for a one title shot as well, which is fucking big money when you're going to be 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then that happened to him. So,
is it the elbow joint, though? Is it just the joint?
I'm not sure. I've not spoke to him for a while yet. I spoke to him a lot long back, and he was in rehab, and just like doing some like really light exercises, trying to get back. But it looked like in the fight
itself.
It's got
like a frame thing, hasn't it?
It looked like the elbow, his arm was like twisted round. It was horrendous.
Dude, I was in Utah recently. I was in Park City, and my family and I were driving down the street. We saw this lady fall down on her bike. She was on the other side of the street, and she was crossing, and something happened. She slipped, and she fell, and she was just yelling for help. And so we looped around, parked the car. I get out, and her fucking elbow was like... It was like the bone went like this, and the elbow went like that, and I'm like, "Stop moving!" And they were trying
to
take
her there. Yeah,
she can't do shit. Yeah. I'm like, and they were like, "Let's take your backpack off." Like, I'm like, "Don't touch her."
Yeah, don't touch.
Don't touch her backpack. Yeah. I'm like, "Grab my hand. I'm going to help you up. We're not going to move your arm. Your arm is broken. I've never had a broken bone." She was like freaking out. She was 50. Never had a broken bone. Never had a broken bone. Like, and then the lucky thing for her, the cops were there. But it's like seeing you're a bone of a person that's just clearly snapped and seeing the elbow just kind of hanging loose, it makes you realize how fucking fragile we are.
But when I used to play football, soccer, I seen it all the time, you know, like in 50-50 challenges where you just do a
ksh,
and you think, oh, someone's brought the leg there, and you don't look, but then you do look, oh, fucking hell. Yeah, it's bad, man.
It's just, we're so fragile. But then you think about, look, what we enjoy. Like, we enjoy
punching each other's face
in sports that are designed to break your fragile body. Like that fucking thing with Mirko and Heath Herring. What? Who would ever engage in an activity where that's possible? Where someone can do that to your rib cage? And,
we're not meant for shit like that, but we find the way to fucking persevere and go through it. It's fucking ridiculous.
And then you rewind it, watch it again. Ooh.
Yeah. That is weird, right? Like the enjoyment of watching someone get smashed.
Rewind that, put it back.
God damn, it's so enjoyable. It is.
It's the most fun.
It is enjoyable when you're in there actually doing it. Yeah. I've had the most fun in some fights that I've lost as well, even when I've lost and I've been getting hurt myself. I've had some of the most fun in those fights. They've been some of the best fights that I'll take away with me. Like the second time I fought Sanchai, we absolutely battered each other that fight. I cut him really bad with an elbow and he hit me with a body shot in round three. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I didn't think he could punch that hard. And I took about four more in a row. And I thought, I'm going to have to take a knee here. And then he ran in to do it again and I elbowed him and then cut him. And I thought, fucking hell. This is amazing. Now, I remember at the time thinking, this is fucking amazing. Like, looking at him and he was bleeding. I couldn't breathe. And I remember thinking, fucking yes. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why people love you. Because you have that sort of lust for combat. You know, it's like that. You either have that or you do not. You know, some people, they look for a way out. And some people look for a way in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that really is the difference between people who win, lose, or draw love a real epic scrap.
Yeah, and I think that towards like this end of my career now, when I was younger, a few times I'd go on back foot and try and point score and not get hurt and stuff like that. Now I'm just seeing it. I'm an entertainer now, do you know what I mean? People pay their hard money. They go out and work, and if they're buying a ticket to come watch me fight, they're going to get a fucking fight, do you know what I mean? Win, lose, or draw, I will go out on my shield and I'll give them what they want to see. That's how I look at it now. And even my last couple of fights, Vinny said, don't fight like that. And I'm like, you know I'm going to enjoy it. And that's,
you know,
that.
You go through all these things. He comes and trains at the boxing club right near my house, Four Corners. John does great work. Have you done any John Gillies down there?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I've got him to slip and he's doing all this and he looks great on the pads. And he just goes,
lights down. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I wonder how many fighters' careers could be extended if they took a different approach to the way they recuperated between fights. Because I think so many fighters, they'll have a fight, they recuperate a little bit, and then they have another fight, and they recuperate a little bit. And there's a lot of benefit to that in terms of your timing and then your relaxation inside the ring because you're so used to competing. It's like you get that moment. But then your body, I feel, gets compromised after a while. You see, like, they're throwing punches different. There's not a lot of fluidity to it. And you wonder, like, if they did a lot of physical rehab or preparation in terms of, like, weightlifting and stretching and yoga and maybe even Pilates and chin-ups and push-ups and just strengthens their body more. Mm. And, you know, it's like everyone's concentrating on fighting techniques. It's fighting techniques, sparring, getting in condition, making the weight. But physical training is
I've only just realized this now towards back end of my career and stuff as well. That's why alt ties are like, a lot of them are retired by the time they're 25, 26.
Yeah.
I've had 200-300 fights. The bodies are just ruined.
Yeah.
And none of them are, when I lived there, no one did strength and conditioning, S&T. That wasn't even a thing there. Now, all the gyms, especially the mainstream gyms, are bringing an S&T coach in.
Yeah.
A lot of them are doing a lot more stretching and stuff like that. And they're all getting smart about it now. And you'll see, that's why TIE fighters now are getting into the 30s and they're all lasting longer.
We'll get Sanchai.
Yeah, Sanchai 40 now, 39, 40.
And he's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still currently the best.
Still fights twice a week, twice a month, sorry. Yeah. Twice a month, and he's still destroying everyone.
I know, he was like, and he's smiling. Like, puts it on his Instagram page. I fight tonight. Like, Knuckles, Dynamite, emojis. And then, you know, afterwards, big smile. You know, I won. Of course you won, bitch. You always fucking win.
Of course you won, mate. He didn't beat Warren, did he, at Scissor Paper Stone?
Oh, my God, mate, in Italy.
What's that? We got a friend called Warren Brown. He's an actor. He was a two-time World Muay Thai champion himself. And we played Scissor Paper Stone. At the after party at Yokao when Sanchai fought and Warren beat him. He fucking well.
The thing is, though, they weren't like having a stick of beer.
He beat him in rock, paper, scissors. Yeah,
for alcohol.
We're talking about that, Vinny. That doesn't mean jack shit.
For drinking, yes,
well,
for
drinking.
So me and Sanchai fought on that show that night, so we entered the after party. If you lose, you got to take a shot of your beer or whatever. Oh. But they didn't have beer. They had fucking wine. So they were drinking pints of wine.
Oh, boy.
Mate, you should have seen. I've never seen
Why
that.
Didn't they have beer? Where were you?
Italy.
In Italy, they didn't have beer?
I think we ran out. By that time, the fucking after party had finished. You had like all the TIE fighters there. We'd all drank them out, and then all we had left were wine. So they're playing.
Kickboxing is big there too, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, you know, obviously Giorgio Petrosian, who's, I mean, he's probably the most popular guy ever from Italy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. He's still doing big. He's fighting for $1 million next month on ONE Championship.
Is he really?
Yeah, we're in the 170 kilo tournament. He's fighting.
What do you think about that fight where he lost and they reversed the decision? What do you think about that?
We're split with this. Liam thinks he Giorgio lost. I think he won. I mean, but because of the punching and because of the scoring where you're not allowed to clinch that long. I think it's very unfair, though, that if you lose, you lose. And that's it. I don't think it should have been reversed.
I watched the thing where they were saying that he clinched too long. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Well,
it seemed like a normal fight to me.
Same.
Yeah, but I still think he landed more punches, but nevertheless, that's open to conjecture, but I honestly think they shouldn't have reversed that.
It depends how you score.
I felt sorry for the tie.
Yeah. And then they fought again, and Giorgio won a pretty clear decision.
Yeah, he won that clear.
What do you think was the adjustment?
Leg kicks.
Yeah, he did. The first thing he started, like the first 10 seconds, he smashed his leg with about 3 solid kicks, like straight away. And obviously, like when your leg's like starting to go a little bit, your rest of your game's going out the window as well.
It was interesting with Giorgio, though, because he was really jumping in with his right hook. Mm-hmm. So he obviously wanted it. Yeah. He's obviously wound up about it as
well. Never
seen him aggressive
I've
like
never
that,
seen him like that before, no, because he's normally clinical, isn't he?
I think he probably realised that there was a lot of stink in the first fight being reversed, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, he put it to bed with the second fight. Mm. But when you're Giorgio Petrosian, you know, you really kind of have this. I mean, the one knockout that he lost in glory to
Andy Risty.
Risty just hit so fucking hard, man.
Yeah.
But that was very shocking.
Yeah.
You know, it took a while for him to rebound from that, right?
He didn't fight for a long time, like Liam was saying about the long guard. If you watch, he got caught with an uppercut with he put his arms out long guard. But I know that his hand was fractured in that as well. His chin wasn't, but you know.
His hand was fractured going into that fight?
He always fractured his hand. His bad hand.
Oh my God.
10. You should see all scars all over it when you see it. It's so bad.
Oh my God. But once they put the bolts in there and the fucking plates, doesn't it just strengthen up? Still kept going.
I thought that.
How's yours?
Mine's fine. I've got plate there. Mine's stronger than this one. When I brought this one before, I brought this probably 3 or 4 times, and twice we're in Thailand, and I didn't go to hospital because I just didn't trust what they'd do with it. So I just fucking let it heal like an idiot. So now I've got this big like claw that I can't even.
Oh, so it was broken, and you never even. I never went to a doctor.
I just like, iced it and then left it. Yeah. So this one, I broke it, and I went straight to hospital. Plate in stronger than ever. This one's just all like you can see a big lump on it. And stuff. Yeah. It's fucked.
And it still hurts when you punch people
all the time. Yeah. I just have to just get on with it in training.
I would imagine it's probably jagged in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got like a big ganglion on it and stuff like that. So I try and take lots of CBD, turmeric, stuff like that. No, for inflammation and stuff like that.
Does it help?
A little bit, but it's just one of them things.
Yeah, but you don't tap anything, do you? No. You know, if you hold pads for him, it doesn't tap anything. Everything's like, bang, bang,
everything's
bang.
Screaming. Yeah. It's very exciting. Yeah, it's very exciting to watch. But I always wonder about your joints. I'm like, Jesus Christ, his shoulders. Like, everything's like, gah, 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 gah. It's like so much torque. You know, that's the thing about strength and conditioning that I wonder, like, how many guys are overusing their body by just continuing to throw, you know, like full power kicks, full power punches at the pads, at the bag, you know, and sparring. Whereas, like, maybe you could extend your career and extend, and maybe your body would work more efficiently if you had, like, a really good strength and conditioning coach who actually understands combat sports and the rigors.
Yeah. Well, the one I use in Leeds, Steve Campbell, now, he recently. Well, because he's training a lot of fighters, he took himself off on a strength and conditioning fight seminar. So, like, he's learned a lot more about that now. I've got another one as well, Dan Mitten, who Vinny uses.
I train with him all the time.
He's more of a movement and agility coach. Mm-hmm. Doing stuff with him has been fucking amazing, though, for, like, shoulders, hips, everything like that.
It's a real art to it.
I train with Dan twice a week, sometimes for 2 hours in the session. And I do a lot of gymnastic rings now because of my hip. I can't run or do much like that. But
can't they fix your hip? Isn't there something they can do about it?
It's a very, very slow process, so it's going to take a while. But I don't think I'll ever be. It's weird because I can't seem to get it into my head how to run because I've learned to walk in such a different way.
Because your one leg is shorter.
Because the long leg is shorter.
Maybe probably hop. Better off doing something that's like low impact.
Yeah.
Have you seen that zero runner thing that I have out there?
No.
It's very interesting. It's weird. Hmm. Like, you got to learn the gait of it, but once you learn the gait of it, it's like it mimics running, but there's no impact at all.
Right.
It's real weird, because most people, when they get on it, their legs just start swinging, and you're like, this is stupid. And then I'm like, I had to show my wife. I was like, no, don't swing. Like, lift your legs up, like, bounce like you're running. And then once you do that, you go, oh, okay. And then you get a swing of this.
Feel like you're gliding.
So, yeah, and you could run, but it's actually harder than just running. Yeah. So it's like
Have you got one here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's interesting. I've used it a few times, and I'm you know, it's kind of a torturous device.
You don't look convinced.
I do, but I use everything. You know, okay. Like I have a big gang of shit out there, right? I have a rower. Yeah. I have that Echo bike from Rogue. Mm. I have the VersaClimber. Oh,
that bike is fucking that bike.
And then the self powering trail treadmill thing from Air Runner. It's Air Runner, right?
Is that one where you sprint on it? That one,
you're powering it, and it's that's the best for running, for real running, because it's actually 13% something like that harder than actual running. Because you're propelling the treadmill as you're running. So when you do that and then you go to regular run, like, you have more pep in your step because you're used to like running at a mechanical disadvantage because of that thing. But it's actually therapeutic. It actually and it's also got a bounce to it, so it's not a lot of pounding, you know. It gives. And you're running on this thing, and you're actually pushing it with your feet as you're almost like pulling it as you're running. Yeah. You should try it.
That's another thing I've stopped doing as well. I don't run outside anymore now.
Really?
Yeah, just for to save my knees and stuff. I do all my running on the treadmill and like 15-minute high intensity sprint work. Because like obviously when you fight, you're not like running at fighting at a slow pace, like when you go for a long jog, which is what they've always said to do in Thailand.
Right.
Get up, go run 10K, slow, round park on the concrete. You're fighting in bursts, so it's more sport specific, really, to be working like that, like high interval stuff.
There's a lot of fighters that they ruin their knees and they can't run anymore, and they have to figure out what to do. Like Kamaru Usman, the UFC welterweight champion, he's got some of the most incredible cardio of anybody, and he can't run. Yeah, his knees are destroyed.
Really?
Yeah,
oh my god! He said his knees were so fucked up that he has to walk on grass. Like when he's walking, he walks on grass rather than concrete because his knees are hurting.
Well, my cousin Andy Alston, he was like one of the most insane fighters like to ever come from England. He's got a massive rep for like being a warmonger. His fight name's Lord of War. He didn't run because he couldn't. He just refused to run. He went, I'm not running. I don't like it. I'm not doing it. And some of the fights he had were absolutely insane. And he never blew. I never seen him blow. Did you?
No, never.
Never gassed. Never.
It's totally possible to get in amazing shape without running, but running helps a lot.
Yeah, I believe so.
I used to like it, to be honest. Yeah. I used to love it. It was fun.
No, well, perfect example is Colby Covington. Colby Covington, he's got insane cardio. Mm. I mean, that Robbie Lawler fight, his fucking cardio is insane. Yeah. And he trains with my friend Cam Haynes, who is an ultramarathon runner, and they run Mount Pisgah in Oregon. That, like, when if you run with a person who's like a real runner, like someone who does, like my Cam does 240 mile races, they last 3 days. Yeah, and you sleep for like 14 minutes in 3 days. I'm not joking.
That's true, I believe you.
Yeah, the woman who won it, Courtney Dowalter, she slept one time. She slept for a minute.
Yeah.
1 minute, they woke her up. She said she felt amazing after that 1 minute sleep.
Really?
Yeah, I watched that. It was good.
She's a savage, that lady. That lady is the mental strength of someone like that. Like, because she's not like a tough girl. Like, I'll kick your ass. Like, she's all smiley and happy, but the real strength, like when the fucking rubber hits the road, like, are you going to quit?
Yeah.
That lady ain't quitting for shit. Yeah. You ain't getting her to quit. She won a race when she was blind. She was having some sort of a bleeding in her retinas, and she couldn't fucking see.
I feel fucking pussy all of a sudden. Dude, now.
So do I. I went to the hospital.
She fell. Yeah. 205 miles in one run. Courtney Dowalter is an ultra addict. That's her.
Just won like a new race, I think.
Of course she did. She's a savage, man. This lady's a savage. She won that 240 mile race, and she beat the second place person by 10 hours.
What?
Ten hours.
That's quality.
I never knew that.
Yeah. Fucking animal, dude. She can push through things that other people can't
push
through.
That's a special kind of fucking human being, that, to be able to, even when you're that far up front, to still push and push and push.
Yeah, she could have taken an 8-hour sleep and still won by 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is madness.
Yeah. Madness. That's a special person. That's
Yeah, and again, like, she eats fucking candy and drinks beer and nachos and shit. Like, yeah. Her diet is not like, it's not like she's Drago from Rocky. Yeah. You've got her strapped up with machines and, nope, just tough.
Going back to the cardio and stuff, though, like, the MMA guys, I think a lot of theirs from, like, wrestling and grappling and stuff like that, their cardio is, like, really fucking something else. Mm-hmm. I did a bit of work with Brian Ortega the other day. He was just hitting pads for an hour, non-stop. Just non-stop, not getting tired.
Crazy.
Yeah, and we did like nearly 2 hours amount of work, and he was still not tired by the end of it. Like, they're fit guys.
Well, I also think he's really ramped it up since the Max Holloway fight, because he faded in that fight. Yeah, and Max started battering him.
He was saying he's not fighting for another couple of months, but he's still doing all the work now.
Well, you know, that's what happens with, you know, Brian is a championship caliber fighter. I mean, he never won a title, but he was beating world champions like Frankie Edgar, like really elite guys. And, you know, he just ran into the best guy in the fucking business at 145.
And the thing as well, he was telling us what he did to his body in that fight. I think he fractured both his hands.
He dislocated his foot or something.
Ligaments went in his knee. And it was a crazy fight, though, wasn't it? So I'm not fucking surprised. It was one of the best fights I've seen that.
Well, to me, Brian Ortega's got great stand-up for sure, but his best skill for sure is his ground game. And for him to not emphasize that as his strategy in the fight, to me, just seems, I feel like it's short-sighted, because I think he could tap anybody in the world at 145 pounds. I really do.
He's fucking massive. I couldn't believe it.
He's a big fella.
Big for that
he's
weight.
He's huge compared to you, isn't
compared
he?
To me, and we fight at similar weights. I couldn't believe it.
He's coming down on Monday. He's going to do some hypnosis, and Liam's going to work with him as
Yeah? Nice. Well, his fucking triangles, I mean, that's his nickname, T-City.
Yeah, T-City.
He throws triangles up like a fucking world beater. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy when you
Real nice guy, man.
Sharp technique, man. But, you know, again, guys fall in love with their hands.
Yeah.
You know, they fall in love with the ability to punch people. I just think that jiu-jitsu and MMA, I mean, one of the things about MMA in general is that there's so many different ways to win.
Yeah.
And when you do win by knockout a few times, you kind of get into that, and you kind of look to do that all the time.
The crowd sort of expect that from you, and then you want to fucking... Yeah,
that's the scary thing about MMA is, like you said, there's so many ways to win, but there's so many ways to fucking lose, too.
Yeah.
You see these guys stand up lighting someone up, and all of a sudden they just go... And that's it, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So
dangerous, man.
It happened to Gaston Bolanos. You know, he got caught with a guillotine in his last fight.
Yeah, we're doing a seminar at CSA on Coach's Clinic on Saturday. Gaston
this Saturday? I love Gaston.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's spinning elbows. Fucking ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's crazy.
Kirian's a good coach, man.
Yeah. He's excellent.
He's a very good coach.
Great guy, too.
Every time you see any one of his gym. From his gym,
the quality on point. Quality.
Yeah, he's got some really good girl fighters.
Yeah,
really good girl fighters as well.
Zoiler and Stephanie Frost.
And that's another gym that really emphasizes strength and conditioning. I mean, they have a whole CrossFit gym. Attached to it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, it has to be done. Like I said earlier, even the Thais are doing it now because they don't want to start getting left behind anymore. And it has to be done.
Like, what kind of shit do you do?
Well, when I was a bit younger, I used to like absolutely smash it. I do a lot more. Like flexibility and mobility stuff now, you know, like the exercise bands and stuff like that, instead of just smashing my body with heavy weights and stuff. I still do like the odd set of like high intensity explosive lifts and like high pulls and a bit of deadlift and stuff like that, but I do a lot more on the bands, you know, like activating my glutes and workouts like that, really.
How many times do you do strength and conditioning a week?
Twice?
Yeah, and is that when you're in camp for a fight as well, or just normally?
No, when I'm in fight camp, I'll do it twice. When I'm not, I'll probably do it once.
Just to conserve your
body. I lose my mind if I don't train. I'll teach, but I can't sit around doing no. Even when I'm fucking injured, it's my own. That's my one of my worst traits. I cannot do nothing.
Yeah, but that's also one of your best traits.
Yeah, true.
That's why you're so exciting. It's because you have this drive to succeed. The interesting thing about strength and conditioning to me is that there's no clear blueprint.
It's what works for you.
There's no established protocol. Like, you have to do this, and then you do this, do that, and then 2 days a week you do this. It's not, everybody does it differently.
Yep.
And then you've got like the Nick Kurson school of thought, like the Marv Marinovich school of thought, which was those guys just concentrated almost entirely on strength and conditioning. And their thought was that strength and conditioning is everything. You already know how to fight.
Yeah.
So when you're in camp, you should just be doing box jumps and rope skips and all these fucking explosive things with balls and medicine balls and shit. And their idea is like, get your engine so you have the most incredible gas tank, the most powerful engine. You already know how to fight. And then skill work is secondary while you're in camp. Right. And then when you're at a camp, then you work on all your skills. Mm-hmm. Then you hit the pads, you do all these different things. You do less of the strength and conditioning, but you maintain a base. But then when you go in a camp, the camp, like when BJ Penn was at his best, he was training with Marv Marinovich, like when he fought Diego Sanchez, when he fought Sean Sherk, mm-hmm. that was the best BJ Penn we ever saw. And he was in insane shape. Insane shape. It's because they brutalized him. I mean, they just made him go through these absolutely insane strength and conditioning workouts. So they gave him this cardio base and this conditioning base that was just through the roof.
I'd be a bit, the closer the fight gets, one of my main weapons I want to know is working is my eyes. So if I've not sparred enough close to the fights, mm-hmm. and I can tell that as well if I'm get the fight, the closer the fights get when I'm sparring, if I'm getting caught with stuff that I should be seeing, I can tell, so I'll spar a bit more and stuff like that. So that's my only worry a bit.
Well, that was the thing with Anthony Yard when he fought Kovalev. He didn't spar at all.
Yeah.
So they say. I mean, that's what they say.
You think they're lying?
I don't know, because I heard he was sparring, but that's so they say. So they say, I don't know.
I couldn't do a fight, can we, no sparring?
No?
I think
when he fought Kovalev, he was that concerned here. He didn't move his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And Kovalev was just a couple of inches out, but Kovalev's smart with his jab.
Well, it's clearly Kovalev was the best fighter he's ever fought.
Yeah,
takes a while to understand, like, as a fighter, that you know there's levels to the game, but when you used to just putting knuckles to face and putting people to sleep, you just think, I'm going to put this guy to sleep too. And when it doesn't work out, you're like, okay.
I did that. I had my first 28 pro fights unbeaten, and my fight 29, I fought a Thai champion. Called Duel, and I dropped him in round 2 and thought, fucking easy this. And he got up and fucked me up, like, worse than I was pissing blood and all sorts. He absolutely battered me for 3 rounds. And I was like, wow, maybe he's not
that easy. What was the difference? What did he adjust?
He took me into clinch, and I were only 18. And he was like mid-20s, and it was the first time I'd ever fought a Thai champion. He took me into clinch, he cut me with an elbow, he kept throwing me on the floor, he fucking kneed me around back, and in my kidneys, I was pissing blood and stuff after. And that's when I thought, after that, no, right, I need to go to Thailand and fight how they fight, train how they train, do what they do if I'm going to ever be able to. Because I can punch, I can kick, I can knee, I need to be able to do what they're good at to get on their level.
What was it like going to Thailand?
I loved it. Like, just 2 years I was there. What I used to do is I'd go for 6 months, come home for a month, go back for 6 months, come home for a month.
So stay in Thailand for 6 months?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's what I used to do. And it was amazing. I've got some fucking ridiculous stories. Like, crazy shit used to just happen all the time there. I remember one time I went back. This is a bit long-winded, this one, but it's a funny one. I've been there about 3 days, and some promoter came in gym, and my coach, Jay, went, oh, he wants you to go fight pro boxing in Cambodia. I said, I've never fought pro boxing, so I'm not doing that.
Pro boxing in Cambodia?
I said, I'm not going there. I said, I don't even want to go to Cambodia. He went, no, it's good money. I went, no, I'm not doing it. Came back the next day with his camera. I said, what are you doing? I said, I'm not fighting. He said, oh, you need your picture took, you've got to go fight. And Jitty knew that I wasn't going to say no. He said, listen, it's double the money you're going to get for Thai boxing. Do you want to go do it? I went, fuck it, all right then. So the fight was in about 10 days. I'd never fought anything other than Muay Thai. The fight was in 10 days. I started doing a bit of work with the boxing coach in the gym, but this is like Thai's for you. Jitty said, you're not fit, train Thai boxing, it's harder, you'll be fitter when you fight. So he made me kick the pads, knee the pads, do all my clinching, everything like that. That's what he made me do. After that, done all my Thai boxing, then I got to work with a boxing coach. He said, you need to be fit. So that's what they made me do. But just before the fight, I went, right, when we're flying to Cambodia, Jay, he went, I can't come. I said, what do you mean? He went, they want it to make it look like they're flying you in from England for their news and stuff, so you're going to have to go with other Westerners. I said, yeah, but none of these, like, elite-level, like, cornermen and all like that, what am I going to do? So I took my friend with me, and we got there. We got off this little propeller plane from Bangkok to Phnom Penh, and the first thing that went in my head, I thought, they think I've flown from fucking England on a propeller plane. No, who's going to buy this? I said to Jitty, I said, who am I fighting as well? He said, oh, you don't even have to lose weight. You can fight at 67 kilos. At the time, I was fighting at 135. He said, you can fight at 147. You don't have to lose weight. He said, the guy's rubbish. Don't worry. Got off the plane, and all the news people were there with the news cameras and all sorts. I thought, can't be this fucking rubbish. I thought news people were there looking pictures and everything. Got in the back of this pickup thing, opened the paper, big spread of him on the paper. Got to the weigh-in. They went, oh, you're too light, what are you doing? I went, I'm 67. They went, the fight's at 69. So it were at 154, not 147. I said, this is fucking bullshit. This, the whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. First round, I got absolutely battered. He was fucking massive. He was well bigger than me. Round two, he pinned me on ropes, and I just put my head down, and I threw a fucking left hook, hit him straight on chin. He went down, starfished. I'm running around the ring, jumping on the ropes, celebrating. I must have been jumping around for about 20, 25 seconds. I got off the rope, and the count were only on three. So the ref's going, three, four, waiting for him to get up. In the end, he picked him off the floor.
What?
This serious. I've got it all on video as well. I'll put it on.
Is it online?
No, I'll put it online and I'll send you it. It's serious. I ran back out with him. I pinned him on ropes. I dropped him again. The ref picked him up because his nose started bleeding, took him to his corner, wiped his nose, gave him a drink, restarted the round, and the bell rung. But luckily, it's only a 6-round fight. I dropped him again in round 4 and again in round 6, so there was no way they could like rob me at all. I dropped him like 4 times in 6 rounds, but still.
Did they still make it close?
Probably. Well, I just wanted to get out. I want to get fucking lynched here. But yeah, it's like crazy shit like that happened all the time and all living in Thailand. Just like mad stories, like promoter coming, Jim, do you want to fight tomorrow? No. Next thing, I'm just fighting with my hands wrapped going, what the fuck's going on here? Do you know what I mean? But Wayne Parr's got loads of crazy stories and like that as well. Like, and I wouldn't change any of it. It's got me to where I am today.
The whole culture of fighting over there, the fact that they get those kids to fight, they take them from their parents essentially when they're like 5-6 years old,
yeah.
And they spend most of their time in the gym. Mm-hmm. And then they have their first fights when they're little tiny kids. Yep. And then by the time they're 15, 16 years old, they might have 100 fights.
Well, I remember I fought a fight called Singdam, and it was my 100th fight, which is a big thing for a Westerner. And yeah. I said to him before the fight, wow, it's his 100th fight. It's a lot for a Westerner. What do you think of that? He went, I had that one off 15. He didn't give a shit. He went, I had that one off 15. Fights. I don't care. Yeah.
That is Singdam's a legend. Isn't it?
Just stop fight, and man. Think about how crazy that is. Like, how many... What are you doing?
Did you fight,
you fight every, 25 times a year?
Yeah, every week.
You think Thai oil kills everything, don't they? Oh, no problem. Okay.
Thai oil. What is that
Tiger liniment? Tiger balm and liniment. Yeah.
But what is that liniment? What is it? Does it do anything?
Someone actually told me the other day, like, one of the main ingredients is aspirin or something like that.
So, aspirin?
Yeah, someone crazy. Someone told me that over there. I never knew that either. I don't know if it's true or not. That's what someone told me.
I think there's an issue with people using that shit, though, in the clinch. Because they use it on their body and then they clinch with you and they get it on your face.
I've had fights before gloves. Where people have put it on the gloves and stuff and rubbed it on the glove with Vaseline. So they pour it in a tub of Vaseline, scoop it, and they rub it on the gloves. And I've had that before. It's awful.
That's awful. So fucked up that someone would do that. Did you complain about it?
Yeah, I was sat in the corner going, I can't fucking see. And Richard, my coach, he had to tell them to go over the corner and wipe his gloves down. And then they did it at the end of every round and start of every round. I wiped his gloves just to make sure that. But he 100% put some on his gloves. 100%. I'd had about 50 fights by that time and I never ever had it before. Do you know what I mean?
Dirty people.
Yeah.
That's so dirty that people cheat like that. That makes me so sick. Like, that goes against everything that fighting is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about you're at your best, they're at your best, you touch gloves.
Let's have it.
I was told when Giorgio Petrosian fought Nonathan Paul Pramuk. He only lost his wristy and Nonathan. And I heard that Giorgio told me that he was poisoned. Yeah. He gave him a drink.
Because there were a big side bet on the fight.
He gave him a drink and then he said he felt all dizzy and stuff like that.
That happens a lot in Thailand whenever there's a fight with a side bet. So like the gyms. So the gym, I think Petrosian's camp and Bukau's camp, he had like a 20 grand side bet or something like that.
Right.
So whenever there's big bets like that, it happens regular now with the poison and stuff like that. Yeah,
what kind of poison they use?
I don't know. It's stuff that can make you feel really poorly and that, but sometimes it's like your stomach and you want to spew and fucking shitting everywhere and stuff like that. But I've seen sometimes where they must have like overdosed them and the fighters ended up getting taken to hospital and being in a really bad way and stuff. So the fight, they're just trying to get an advantage to win the bet, but the fight hadn't even ended up happening because they've fucked them up so bad.
It's like fighting in Thailand's like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. It's like there's also fuckery afoot.
Depends on looking after you, because on the island, I only go to Koh Samui. I go to Super Pro. When I go over there, and it's not really like that over there. It's not as rough.
I love the gambling culture, though. Oh. I love the fact that they're like, you see all the guys in the background like passing money around and it's like
waving their hands and shit. Yeah.
When I used to live there, because I was fighting for money. What I used to do is if I ever got short money, I'd bet on myself. And I got told I was fighting this guy who I'd lost to previously before, but I was so close to knocking him out, I was 100% certain I was going to beat him and I was going to knock him out. So I bet my entire wage, I bet all the money I had, everyone in the gym put loads of money on me to win as well. And I hit him with a left hook in round 3, his legs went, I ran in to finish him, he bounced off the rope and kneed me. And he didn't drop me a rope, but just all my power just went, and I was trying to finish him. I went and sat down and ended around three in my corner. I went, what are you fucking doing, mate? You finish him? I went, I can't breathe. I went out round four, all my power had gone. I lost round four, which is the money round. Then I was chasing the fight in round five, no money.
Why is round four the money round?
In Muay Thai, in Thailand, like round three and four are the big rounds. Round one and two, they're just easing in, and it's like basically scored as if it's a marathon, not a sprint. So even if you win round one and two, if you lose round three and four, you've lost the fight.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You don't know that. So it's all, I like it's all that. About
I lost all my money, everything that I didn't get a purse, or mail me other money. I had to fight again 3 days later. Because I was fighting for money.
Three days later.
Jitty put me on plane and went down to Phuket, and it was an easier fight, but I was still really banged up because it was a tough fight I just had, and I had to fight 3 days later just to get some money.
Now, when you have to fight 3 days after you fought, do you train at all in between those fights?
I couldn't. I were injured. I was fucking... I had to go do it, do you know what I mean?
Because you needed money.
Either that or go home. I'll ring my mum and go, Mum, give me some money.
Oh, God.
And I'd already tapped her up a few times, I think, so... Yeah, so that's what I had to do. But luckily, down on the islands in like Phuket where I went to fight, the fighters aren't as strong as in Bangkok. So I won that fight. I knocked him out, but still.
What is the difference between fighters that train in Phuket and fighters that, at the time?
It's in Bangkok, they're all there to make a name for themselves on the elite level stadiums. Rajaram Nern, Lumpini, Channel 7, Om Noi. These are the elite of the elite. These are the guys who are going to get scouted and go on to stuff like One Championship, who are going to win titles and get money and become massive names. Mm-hmm. In Phuket, it's just like they're probably just fighting for a bit of extra money just to, you know, just to cap off the wage or something at the end of the week. It's like you get a lot of them who's got another job and they just might fight at the end of the week, or they're a pad man. They're be a trainer in a gym. They won't train, they won't bother doing all other than just holding pads all day, and I think, oh, you know what, I can get an extra 10,000 baht, well, which is probably about, what, $200 at the end of tonight, and I'll just go have a fight.
For so 200 bucks?
Something like that, yeah. So they'll just go do that. They'll take a few shots, and they'll probably fall down. But in Bangkok, where the elite are fighting the elite, you know you're not going to get any of that. You know people are there just to like make a name for themselves, especially in those stadiums.
That's a crazy place in the world. Bangkok. Like, you have to think, where this one place with this one style of fighting became the most popular, and it's used as gambling. There's like, if you think of the rest of the world, there's no place where you go where people wrestle for money, where everybody's gambling on wrestling, right? Yeah, there's true. No place, you know, where people throwing money in the air for Western
boxing.
Gambling's
illegal in Thailand. Only thing you're allowed to bet on is fighting.
Really?
Yeah, it's illegal.
You can only bet on fighting.
Only bet on fighting in the stadiums.
Wow, yeah. I didn't know that.
The closest casino is on the border in Cambodia. So if anyone wants to gamble in casino, they go up to the border up there and stuff.
Oh, that makes
sense. That's
why
it's so crazy. That's why everyone... Wow. Yeah.
But it's just... They fucking figured something out that other people didn't figure out. Hmm. I mean, but you think about the one part of the world. It's an island. They figured out about how to kick the legs better than anybody. Hmm. It's really crazy. They figured out how to work the clinch and knee to the body better than anybody. To dump people and
elbows
trip them.
As
and
well.
Yeah. Elbows, drop them. Sweep them. More better than anybody.
That's the thing when you're fighting the Thais. When you clinch them with them, that's why I had to go live where. Because you cannot clinch with one of them who's been doing it since we're 5-6 years old. Even like the tall, thin, lean Thais who've got that like wiry strength are still like some of the strongest people. Who you'd look at him in the middle of the street and think, I'll fuck him up. No, you won't.
The nicest,
the nicest
people, though, aren't they, as well? They're really nice-natured people. They seem so, but you get them in that ring and you're fucked.
How is Sanchai able to keep up this high level of skill and performance at 40 years old? How is he able to do
it? I think his awareness is better than everybody else's.
Yeah, that's it.
I think he's got a sense of awareness that I think special elite people have. You know, he's distancing Giorgio Petrosian or Floyd. They just seem to have this ingrained sort of congruence with the self, you know.
He also is very agile in terms of his footwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He don't take no damage. Like, so now, that's why he's fighting twice a month still. He's not getting hurt. He don't really train much either. He'll come in gym, do a couple of rounds on pads just to make sure he's sharp. Go, right, that's me done. Or a few rounds place
really?
Bar. Yep, or a few rounds place bar with no shin pads on. Right, that'll do. Do you know what I mean? Just to make sure that
he doesn't train hard, no, not anymore.
He doesn't train hard?
No,
not anymore.
Really?
Not anymore, no. When he was in stadiums as a champion, he would train like no one had ever seen, do you know what I mean? But like, now, no. Obviously, the gym where we train is where he is. So when I'm in Thailand still, I'm training alongside him, so I see what he does, and that's what's even more impressive about it. He'll come in, 2-3 rounds on pads, or 2-3 rounds place bar, no shin pads, nothing strenuous, no S&C. He'll only run a little bit before the fight just to lose weight as well.
Got a great sense of humour as well, hasn't he? He's quite humorous and quite playful, so he's
how is he able to get away with such little work?
Because I think a lot of time, like, when he's fighting now, he's not fighting Thais anymore, he's fighting Westerners, and I think a lot of time, when these guys are fucking Anthony Sanchai.
Right.
So they're a bit starstruck before they even get in there, I think, a lot of time.
Right, that makes sense.
Even when they try and put it on him, he's so smart, and like Jimmy was just saying, his awareness and his footwork and stuff are so good, he can like move off, kick your skull.
Only really lost to clinchers, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, mainly to clinchers who people can grab and knee him.
And that was only because what they used to do is make Sanchai weigh in at 5 pounds lighter than them, just so it'd be even for the betting. So they'd make him like drop down to 130, and then his opponent would be 135, just so it'd be even on the betting. Because if you put them both at the same weight and Sanchai's fresh, no one's going to bet, because you know Sanchai's going to win. So they dehydrated him to bring him down, just so it'd be, so the gamblers be like, right, ooh, he might be done by round four.
Interesting about Sanchai as well is that like his style is so, he's so light on his feet, you know, and he doesn't kick full blast.
No.
You know, like even when he's hitting the pads, like, hey, it's like he's slapping the pads. Yeah. He's not fucking digging in, you know, like some guys dig in.
And he's got that internal rotation as well. You know, he's just whip his leg over. Mm-hmm. Like he's so, and he can fake your leg kicking and whack you around the neck. He's a special
mark.
Guy.
Question mark kicks off the charts.
Ridiculous.
No, he also does stuff like he'll land head kicks at a really close distance by stepping off to the side.
Yeah.
Remember that one time it was like a crazy head
ropes,
kick. Against the ropes, and he steps off to the side and lands almost a straight up and down
left high
kick.
Remember that one.
Just the ability to land a high kick in that tight, it's crazy.
It's his southpaw footwork as well. Like one minute he's stood in front of you, the next he's done something, he's shifted off, and then he's there.
Yes,
and that's when that kick's gonna come up.
Is he influencing younger Thai fighters to fight more light on their feet and to have more movement? Because you know the Thai fighters, it's so common to see guys like standing right in front of each other and exchanging techniques. He's not doing any of that.
There's
shit.
Not many who can do it like him. To be honest, he was a special kind of fighter. I've never seen anyone who's got the same style as him in Thailand. A lot of the gyms in Thailand. A clinch gyms, so they'll be doing more clinching than anything else. And even for the ones who are similar to his style, they're still nowhere near him, to be honest.
I think it's one of those things, though, as well, where you, if you see someone like Sanchai and you try and mimic it, a lot of coaches put you off it. You know, like the stuff that Lomachenko does.
Mm-hmm.
If you say to a coach, an old school boxing coach, oh, I want to start juggling, I want to start standing on one leg, or I want to start doing the Schultz test or the numbers, and they seem to like, oh, that's shit, like, you're doing that. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I think it's sometimes people are stifled from learning because of the way that their mindset is, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I think that coaches always want you to fight the way they know how to teach you how to fight. It's a rare, talented coach that can see what you can do and move around it.
Yeah.
You know, isn't one of the interesting things to me in coaches is Dwayne Ludwig, because Dwayne Ludwig teaches so different than he ever fought.
Mm.
Like, he realized, like, at the end of his career, like, you know what the best way to fight is? The best way to fight is to, like, give your opponent so many different looks and overload their brain with possibilities, switching stances to all these different, and then he put it all down into a system.
Yeah.
But if you go back to watch the way Dwayne fought like real standard Dutch kickboxing style.
Yeah.
Like that was his style.
He fought Dekker, didn't he? He fought Ramon Dekker.
He did. Well, Dekker late in his career when Dekker's ankles were like completely shot and, you know, he still looked awesome.
Well, I wouldn't want to teach anyone to fight like how I fight, really. You've got to work to what their advantage is and see what's going to work best for their style, because everyone's got a different style.
Yeah.
I can implement parts of my style onto theirs, but I wouldn't want to like try and change it. And like there are some gyms in England that have all got like one generic style. If you see a fighter, you know they're from that gym.
Mm-hmm.
Like at a Bad Company where we train, like we've all got, all our top level fighters are all different. We've got someone who's a boxer, someone who's a clincher, someone who's a kicker, someone who's an idiot. Do you know what I mean? It's like all the styles are just totally different.
Right. Yeah.
That's what makes a good coach as well, being able to bring that out of a fighter and add bits of your style to theirs, but mainly like let them flourish with their own style.
But you would also think that, like, how many people can teach you how to fight like Sanchai?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people even can move like that guy?
Not many.
He does weird shit. You know, like, he's got that sliding push kick that's like a side kick that he does a lot, too. He's like, he like throws it
off his front leg, southpaw. Yeah,
he trained a lot with Thingy, though, didn't he? What's his name? Somrat Kam Singh. Somrat Kam Singh had an elusive sort of loose style.
Yes.
And he moved his head, and he was an Olympic gold medalist one. I think it was 1996, I think. But he had that elusive style, the head movement and stuff like that. And then Samart Payakaran, who's known as the best Thai ever, TIE fighter ever, I think.
Super elusive, right?
Yeah, super elusive, moved ahead and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just think it's like you say, though. I think it's the generic camps. You know how strict they are in Thailand, fucking fight like that or don't fight.
Do you think that the guys Sanchai's fighting now are just like a little lower level?
Yeah. Yes, guy? Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah. The idea is like everybody knows he's a legend, so you could pay him to fight someone
pretty much. They're paying for Sanchai's name, do you know what I mean? So, not like paying to see a fight where it's going to be, oh, who's going to win this, who's going to bet on this. No one's betting. Everyone knows what's going to happen. He's earned his stripes. He's done everything that not many people will ever do. And that's what it is now. It's just like other Westerners and stuff trying to make a name for themselves now.
Yes.
Saying, oh, I might be the one who beat Sanchai. But unless someone.
I mean, most of them just try and do a cartwheel kick, don't they? And if they get a cartwheel kick off, it's, hey, I've won. Yeah. Then they get fired. You know what I mean?
Now, do you think that, like, has he gotten an offer to fight in something like ONE? Because ONE is not going to let him fight.
It might have done, but...
guys at the level that he's competing at, right? They would want him to fight
high-level guys. The only people ONE have got signed are elite level. There's no easy ways out or anything on there. All the ties that were signed to him are all elite. Mm-hmm. All the Westerners are the best Westerners. He might have got an offer, but to be fair, he can fight twice a month and he can fight all over the world and he's still getting paid good money every time he fights, so I don't think it really matters to him, to be honest. He's done all that already and fought all them best guys and beat them all, even with a weight disadvantage and being pulled down, and so I don't think he's really has to worry about
that. So he's just right now just sort of getting paid and having fun.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Wonder how much longer he could do it.
The level he's fighting at, and if he keeps himself in shape, then is that people lose when they get in with him, don't they? You know what I mean? There's no one.
Is he here now? He's in LA.
They pick it right, yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, doing seminars.
For how long?
I think he's just gone off to. Oh, I can't remember where he's gone today. I was looking on his Instagram earlier. He's been taken off somewhere else today, though. So they've drove in a bus from the East Coast to the West.
Holy shit.
I think he's done about 20, 25 seminars so far all over the place.
Oh, my God.
So, like, he's obviously earning ridiculous money. Like, one of them had 100 people in and stuff, do you know what I mean? So he's earning, like, money, like, from other stuff. So he don't need to be putting himself in elite level against young, hungry, killer ties who are going to want, I'm going to beat Sanjay. So he's earned his stripes, hasn't he? So,
yeah, he has, and he's earned it the hard way, hasn't he? Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he certainly has. How good is his English?
The first time I fought him 10 years ago, he couldn't speak a word. But obviously, like in the gym he's at now in Thailand, there's lots of Westerners coming there just because they know he's there. So, and he's doing more seminars, so he's learned a lot more now. You can have a good crack with him now. You can have a laugh with him.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
He's a proper cool guy. And he spends a lot of time with Spencer as well. Spencer's our friend from Scotland. Mm-hmm. He lives at the Yokau camp, and he's a nice kid, and they converse a lot.
I follow him on Instagram.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, with what ONE is doing is kind of like the future of the sport? Because they're introducing elite-level Muay Thai fighters to a gigantic Asian audience.
100%. Especially the way they've got the shows set out as well, where you've got top-level MMA, top-level kickboxing, top-level Thai, the summit for everyone, and it's still going out to these massive numbers. So, yeah, I do. I believe so.
Grappling competitions.
Yeah. They've got everything.
I love that they just do whatever the fuck they want, you know? They've got, you know, really interesting talent.
Yeah, he's been saying as well, your chat tree, that they've got some TV deals in America and stuff coming up, and then so they're going to try and bring it over this side as well, and there could be like some rival to UFC in future, hopefully.
Well, I certainly saw, I don't remember what network it was, but one of their more recent events was on television. Like, I was flipping through the cable channels, it said ONE FC. I was like, what? And it was a recent event. It was like right after the event had happened, then they were airing it.
Oh, well, there you go. Then yeah. So he's getting out there now, because they've already got Asia locked down. So if they can get into America and in Europe, they're giving
chances to other people, like from the Philippines and that. There's a lot of MMA fighters from the Philippines coming through and stuff like that.
No, them guys are good as well.
They are.
You'd never see it other than we've wanted to give them a platform.
Mm, that's it.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, they're taking some of the top talent from Glory as well, right? Mm. A lot of those guys are going over there.
Yeah, some from Ilias Anashi, who was with Infusion, who I work for. He's just gone on to ONE, and then ONE knocked out the Thai. Who did he knock out?
Pechstam.
I said he'd do that, didn't
he? Yeah. Like one of these, is he Dutch Moroccan?
Yeah, and he trains with Saeed El Badoui, the same coach as Badr's training with as well. So,
how do you get kickboxing to be big in America? Why can't they figure that out? It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
I think because MMA, I think it's because it's I think because the college wrestling, I think it's stuck. as well. You know, the boxing, America's always had great boxers and always had boxing fights, but I think it may be because of the college wrestling and because it's more of what you're used to.
College wrestling? What do you mean?
Well, they wrestle, don't they? Wrestling's popular, you know what I mean, in colleges and stuff like that. So I think they've kind of touched to that. Or maybe it's a new sport and they've grabbed onto it and it's they've kind of got it as theirs, because MMA's really, like, UFC's like got
if
it.
If one got over here, though, with their MMA and mixed show, yeah, and then... If you're sat there waiting for MMA to come on, but in between that you see some fucking crazy Thai fight with two people going at it in 4-ounce gloves, having a proper war, that might help if they did something like that, do you know what I mean? And then you've got, like, the average Joe who's never seen it before thinking, whoa, what were that? And I've never seen that before, I liked that. So maybe something like that, like some mixed shows with, like, what one do, that's why there's something for everyone on them shows.
Well, Muay Thai and kickboxing hasn't took off in England either, so...
It hasn't?
No,
really. It's got a lot better over the years, but it's still not as mainstream as it should be.
It's not the platform that it should be. Yeah. I mean, your fight with Haseem Bannoui is just crazy, you know what I mean? Or one FC, one championship fights, you know, we're always glued to as soon as it's on, we're strapped with our phones and watching it, so it's a shame, really. Yeah, it's
a bummer in America.
Yeah.
You know, Dana White had a really interesting point. He said, we got ruined in the 1980s with PKA karate.
Yeah.
Like, they used to have PKA karate, and, you know, there was some guys that were really exciting, like Rick Rufus.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was bullshit. It was, like, boring.
Kicks above the waist.
Well, yeah, and they weren't that good. They would just throw a couple kicks and then shitty boxing.
When the guy called Steve Superkick Wick? He was good.
I don't know who that guy is. Yeah. Bill Superfoot Wallace.
Yeah, Superfoot Wallace, but there was some called Superkick Wick.
What happened in England, though, we got some airtime on TV, and I don't know what we chose the fights. They chose shit fights to put on.
Oh, really?
So, obviously, no one's going to be interested in watching them. If you're going to, like, get a spot, you need to put out there, like, pre-recorded shows of the best fights and put them on just to get some interest.
Yeah.
And then maybe people will just start taking a bit more notice. But we had, like, a few, like... spots on Sky Sports, and they put shit fights on.
So that's a bummer.
Yeah,
because there's so much great talent out there. Like, whenever I watch Glory, I stop and think, I'm like, how is this not enormous? Like, there's so many boxing fights that are kind of boring.
Yeah, true.
And then you watch this, and like, Jesus Christ, it's so much more exciting.
Exactly. And I can't get my head around it. Yeah. And even after that fight in Cambodia, where I had a headache for 6 days or something after that. And that were only a 6-round fight. That's why I thought, one, that was boring. I didn't like it. I hated it. And two, got a headache for 6 days. I'm never doing this again.
Because you're taking more shots to the head?
Yeah, even when it's hitting your gloves and stuff, it's all like, didn't do it for me at all. I appreciate boxing. I do love watching it and stuff, but Muay Thai and kickboxing is way better.
It's
more
also
exciting.
The reality is, if any elite boxer decided to fight an elite Muay Thai fighter with Muay Thai rules, they're getting fucked up. You have a couple seconds to close the distance, Mike Tyson style, and put that dude away.
Otherwise, you're getting your leg blasted.
I mean, I would like to see. I would have loved to see a guy like Mike Tyson in his prime. If there was a guy like Rico or some elite level kickboxer who could potentially fuck him up on the way in, you know?
Well, someone like Rico's got good kicks and good knees for such a big guy as well. It'd be fucking no chance, I don't think.
Mike Tyson can always close that distance, though. You never know.
Well, did you see when Mike Tyson and John Jones was messing about? Like, play sort of sparring thing. And you could see the right hands going boom, and you could see what you're doing. And then John Jones was like, fucking hell. You know, whoa,
But then also, that's a 50-year-old Mike Tyson.
Yeah, true. You know?
Yeah.
It's just when he was young, like when, you remember the Marvis Frazier fight?
Yeah.
That was like
ruined him, and then he was flopped when he was
execution.
Yeah.
Just stepped in and just, I was thinking, like, what if someone was like an elite kickboxer? Would you be able to hold that guy off? Like that one. Like that, the Mike Tyson in his prime when he was storming his way towards the title.
Yeah, true. You'd have to clinch.
Yeah.
You'd have to clinch and tie him up and elbow and knee and let go.
It was that quick.
You try and grab him, that's coming over the top.
Some guys did manage to make it to the final bell with him. Like, there was some guys that managed to survive.
Yeah, Tony Tucker.
Yeah,
Tony Tucker. Bone Crusher Smith.
Yeah, there's a few guys.
Bone Crusher Smith wobbled him as well. Yeah. Towards the end of that, was a right hand, and then he just wobbled, dipped his legs a little bit.
Bone Crusher Smith was a powerful dude.
Yeah, he was. He beat Frank Bruno, didn't he? He used to first person to knock out Frank Bruno. Frank Bruno's up and coming heavyweight then.
Yeah. England. Frank Bruno had the most preposterous body ever.
Yeah. Right? Like a bodybuilder or something. Jesus Christ.
He was the original Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. You know? That's why a lot of people in England say that now.
Yeah. But Joshua's clearly a better fighter. Yeah. You know, he was definitely more talented. But what did you think about that Andy Ruiz fight?
I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I'd seen Ruiz fight Parker, and it wasn't that really exciting fight at all. So I didn't even watch it because I thought it was going to be a whitewash. And then when I was on the boxing group that we talked about earlier and I seen what had happened, I was like, fucking hell, no way. But I'm not sure what did actually... Someone went right there. He just didn't look comfortable from being on the first belt at all. Even on his ring walk, he didn't look comfortable, Joshua.
Well, the rumour was that he had gotten KO'd in training.
Yeah, I'd heard that too.
Yeah. But I heard he hurt his neck. Have you seen Mass... I mean, it's not making excuses. You get in there, you get beaten, that's it. But he's never said it. But when you can see that the corner's rubbing his neck. And it's weird because Robert McCracken's trying to talk to him. And he's just elsewhere.
Yeah, he didn't seem with it.
But, you know, props to Andy Ruiz.
Andy Ruiz looked amazing. But if he had been KO'd in training, if that was the case, then it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but even before that, though, he dropped him. What round did he drop Ruiz?
He dropped Ruiz in round three.
Round two or three, yeah. And he's a good finisher, Joshua, isn't he?
Yeah.
But he just didn't have.
But he went in. The whole style of it was weird. The way he was boxing was weird. He was like. I'm not going to say any excuses for anyone, you know what I mean, but he just didn't look the same. But the rematch will say it all, really.
Yeah.
What's
interesting to me about Ruiz is how fluid his combinations are.
Well, I started watching him on pads after that and watching him train and stuff, and I'm like, fucking hell, he is actually fucking really
why
good.
Why didn't we look at him and go, he's fucking dangerous.
Yeah, his efficiency with his punches, like, everything's so fluid, and he throws high volume
power as well.
Whereas Joshua is on the outside, he's a 1-2 big shot guy. It's like Ruiz is, you know, it's a dangerous combination of two styles, because if Ruiz gets in tight, he's going to land.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to land, and he's going to land like a middleweight. Mm. You know?
A weird thing was, when he was in a picture with the belts, he gave him Ruiz too old. I thought it was really weird.
What?
Because there's a picture where there's a press conference somewhere, London maybe, and they were having it was New York, wasn't it? And he gave Ruiz his belts to hold, like
Joshua's belts.
Yeah, and I didn't get that
the fight.
Yeah, because Lomachenko, when there was a picture of Luke Campbell holding the WBC belt, and he was like, "What are you fucking doing? That's mine."
Yeah.
He hadn't won it yet, but he already in his mind was like, "That's fucking mine." It was strange.
Yeah, I won't ever be doing that if I were defending.
No, exactly.
Title.
Luke looked like he was having fun with them. Yeah. Lomachenko, they were being friendly with each other before the fight.
Yeah, Luke's a great guy, man. He did a great job, but got massive respect for him.
Yeah, he hurt him with some body shots too. He really did.
Yeah, he did.
You know,
and he hit with a long left hook.
Mm-hmm.
But Lomachenko just adjusted, and that was it then. He was looking inside Lomachenko. I was watching it with my friend, and I was saying, you can see him looking inside the jab.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gap in Campbell's hands here, and you could see him just dipping all the time, you know, looking for that gap, and then get that, and he threw, I was watching him train to see what I could see, and he was throwing a body shot. He threw a body shot, and then he looping left hand. It was so fast.
It's interesting also, he dropped him with a jab. And that's the same punch that Kovalev dropped Yard with. Mm. He stopped him with his jab.
Stopped him with it.
Yep. Which is kind of crazy.
I think he was more exhausted by that point. No, maybe he had, though. So anything's going to do.
That did the damage. That's what Ward used to do, the damage with that jab.
Well, Ward had one arm. You know, that's really crazy.
I couldn't believe that.
When we were talking about it on the podcast, saying his shoulder was basically half hanging on.
Yeah.
You know about him, I watched the most is Kovalev and Ward, the fights. I must have watched it about 15 times now. It's Jorge Linares and Lomachenko.
Yeah, that was a great fight.
That's a fucking good fight, man. Jorge Linares is class. Absolute class act.
He's very good.
Yeah, awesome.
And the thing about Lomachenko that's so interesting to me is that his father made him take 4 years off of boxing just to concentrate on dance.
Ukrainian dance.
For his footwork. It's like, wow. Crazy. Like, what kind of insight did his father have?
That's the thing now, though. When I'm watching him, I don't know where to look. I don't know whether to watch his feet or watch what he's doing at all. Because either he's really interesting to watch, especially if you're like a purist who's looking for stuff like this. I don't know where to look when I'm watching him.
And his dad won't have interviews. You can't interview his dad.
He won't?
He won't, no. He said, I will speak after his career is finished.
Wow.
So he said, I will talk after his career. You know what I'm like? I'm like, tell me. Can you just tell me?
Well, I mean, he obviously has a winning formula. I mean, the guy's the in the shortest amount of time ever has won world titles in three different weight classes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just results speak for themselves.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
And, you know, there's, I mean, the argument of who's best pound for pound is always an interesting argument. It's, in my eyes, it's him. There's Terrence Crawford. Yeah. There's a couple other guys that are in the running, but those are the two big ones. Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say Crawford, Lomachenko, Usyk's up there now with that because he unified the division and he's going up to heavyweight. So we'll
but it's a lighter division, I mean, we'll in terms of talent-wise.
Yeah, I think Crawford's a great fighter. Him and Errol Spence is just...
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be the one.
Ringing
that's
hands.
That's incredible.
Spence would be a great fight.
Porter next weekend. Yeah.
That's a hard fight.
It'd be a good fight. Because Porter will come to fight.
Yeah.
But I think Spence body shots might wear him down later on.
Body shots and uppercuts because he gets close, Porter.
Yeah, when he fought Mikey Garcia was just a little too small.
Yeah. They were a lot too small, really.
Yeah, just really wasn't in that weight class. And you see Errol Spence is such a... Earl is just such a powerful guy and big at that weight class.
He's a middleweight, isn't he? Really?
Yeah, he's a huge
banger, man. He hits so hard.
But he's his southpaw body shots that's difficult to prepare for, especially that long. He throws that. He's got such a good heavy jab that he can get that left body shot in so sweet. He's just such a good fighter. Him.
Yeah, he's got skill too. I mean, he's very skillful. Mm-hmm. On top of having that great power and size, and he's got so many good attributes. The thing about Crawford, though, is his ability to switch stances.
He'll start a fight orthodox and then just switch southpaw and just stick to southpaw.
It's almost like he's figuring you out as orthodox, just trying to give you a different thing to get accustomed to, and then all of a sudden,
done.
And that he's better as a southpaw.
He's got power from either stance and stuff as well. Man. Knock you out.
Just as good.
And because no chance is so mean spirited.
Hagler was the last guy who was really able to do that. Yeah. Switch stances as well.
And Hagler wasn't really effective in orthodox. He wasn't that as effective. That's what they say that he lost the fight with Sugar Ray Leonard because he went orthodox to prove a point in the first six rounds. But I think Leonard had done his head in by then.
I didn't think he lost that fight. I thought Hagler won that fight.
I'm a Sugar Ray Leonard fanboy.
Yeah,
so,
are you?
Yeah.
Go to his Instagram.
Yeah.
Change your mind.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Really?
I just watch him and just the way that he slips under shots, only for Hagler, and the way he just glided about. It's just so beautiful to watch his incredible art, man.
There was a video he posted recently of him when he stopped Floyd Mayweather Sr. I'm like, man, you forget how good Sugar Ray was. He was incredible.
Yeah, he beat him up, didn't he?
But my God, his Instagram is hilarious. He does the most ridiculous workouts. Like, you know, he's older guy, but he's like, you know, we're working hard. He's like,
I've seen him fucking unload on bag not long ago as well, and he was still faster than me.
Really?
He's like 60.
Yeah, he does like ladder workouts, like the step ladder on the ground. He's obviously an older guy, you know, you could tell, but, you know, still active.
I watched the other day Meldrick Taylor and Chavez, you know, the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Class. But
did they fight twice?
Yeah, they fought twice, and it was at welterweight. And
was the second one a brutality?
Yeah, he stopped him in round eight. He'd already lost to Terrence.
That first fight changed his life, man. It was such a beating.
Now, isn't he?
And the fact that he made it to that final round, he's one of the worst examples ever of a guy being punch drunk. Yes. If you listen to Meldrick Taylor talk, it's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't understand a word he's saying.
But the funny thing was, Leonard said how to beat him, how to beat Chavez. He said if he listens and not get involved in a fight and keeps it on the outside and keeps doing what he can do, he'll win the fight. Yeah. And clearly, because he's from Philly, apparently he liked to fight. He liked to scrap, and then it was just—it was tragic. His story's tragic because he was my idol at one time.
Well, Richard Steele was criticized heavily for stopping that fight with like 2 seconds to go, but he was correct.
Yeah,
the guy was done.
The thing is, Duva came on the ropes. This is the story: Meldrick was getting the count off Richard Steele, and if you look, Meldrick looks to his right, and apparently Lou Duva was on the ropes shouting his name. And he looked at him, and then Richard Steele went. But, I mean, one punch too late,
Well, it's like,
it was, wasn't it, in his case?
Does a referee have an obligation to recognize that this fighter can survive, and if he does survive, he's probably going to win in decision? Yeah. I mean, does he have an obligation? Or if he looks and he says the guy's done, the guy's done.
He's done, yeah.
Whether it's 5 seconds to go or 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's – but for people watching that wanted Meldrick to win, they're like, fuck. But for people who wanted Chavez to win, look, when he dropped him, I mean, it looked like Meldrick was done.
Yeah.
Mm. You know? And then from that fight on, he was never the same
no,
again.
No, never again.
And then when he fought Terry Norris, that was horrific.
Yeah, he got locked, smashed in 4 rounds, didn't he?
Well, Terry's another one, like severely compromised now. Yeah. Like you hear Terry talk now, it's really hard to listen to.
Mm. He was trained by Abel Sanchez, wasn't he?
Terry was
Norris,
he?
Yeah. Mm. Orlin Norris and Terry Norris. He had a brother called Orlin, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Orlin was a heavyweight.
Yeah. Yeah, but he beat Ray Leonard, and I didn't like that. And Terry Norris beat Sugar Ray Leonard.
Oh, yeah, he fucked him up.
Yeah, beat him up, man.
Yeah, Sugar Ray had no business being in there with him.
No.
But, you know, Terry took his knocks, man. I mean, the really big one. Well, he had quite a few fights where he was hurt, you know, real bad. Yeah. But Julian Jackson.
One shot, one kill.
Yeah, when Julian Jackson
stopped
him.
One shot, one kill, man.
Crazy power.
I mean, they're going about Golovkin, don't they? But Julian Jackson was one shot.
No, Golovkin hits hard, but it's a volume thing. Yeah. Julian Jackson would thump you one time in the face and your whole body would stiffen up like you got hit by lightning.
Did you see him when he knocked out Dennis Milton? You know, I think he hits him with a left up, bang, and as he's falling, he goes, at the same time.
Really?
It's like, bang, yeah.
Hey, Golovkin will break you up with his jab first before he does all that, and then break you down slowly.
Julian Jackson, he's putting one shot.
Still can't find him, though, can we?
Yeah, true.
Oh, Golovkin, you guys are looking for him.
Every year I come here.
You're stalkers.
Brian Dolber, 100%. Say to Brian Dolber, our friend from Double Dose Muay Thai, Brian, can we go to the Big Bear? All right, sure, guys. I'll take you to the Big Bear. I'm like, winding the windows down.
Is that your Brian impression?
That's the deepest I can go. And I'm looking out the window. We never, ever. Yeah. We went to his restaurant where he goes to eat, but not down
that's
again.
So stalker-like, though. Isn't that weird that you're doing that?
I am a weird guy. I just don't fucking mind admitting that, you know what I mean?
If you find him, what are you going to do? Get a selfie?
Oh, I would just go, it's him!
I don't know what I'd do. I'd be starstruck.
You said to me, when Joe said that Andre Ward was coming on, he said if he was going on at the same time, so he said, fucking hell, I'll have to pick you up because you'll faint.
Yeah. He would if he saw Andre Ward, he would.
You would faint?
Yeah, 100%.
I fucking love Andre Ward.
Andre's such a nice guy.
Class guy, man.
Well, he's also one of the only guys ever to walk away at the top.
Yep.
Undefeated.
Yep. Carl Sagan.
Gold medalist in the Olympics. 2 weight classes.
Mm. Carl Sagan did the same.
Yeah, Carl Sagan did the same. Carl Sagan doesn't get his due.
No, he doesn't.
For whatever
reason. No, he does not.
46-0.
Why do you think he doesn't get his due?
I've no idea, to be honest, because he beat all big names. Fair enough.
Beat everybody.
Yeah, a few of them might have been a little bit past the sell by day.
So what?
He beat Kessler everybody. Won and,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He had some massive wins. He beat whoever were put in front of him. I don't know why he don't
get his due. I didn't trash talk either, did he?
No.
I mean, when he beat Jeff Lacy. I mean, Jeff Lacy was like the Tyson of the
Left
super middle.
Lacy, yeah. Yeah.
At the time, because I used to, my amateur club, I used to, with the same club as Robin Reed. Robin Reed won a WBC super middleweight title, and then he boxed. Jeff Lacy got smashed, I think it was in 7 rounds. And he said afterwards, Carl Zaghi will beat him. And then when he was at MEN, it was just like, I thought, fucking hell, Carl Zaghi's going to get smashed here, but. No, he was
beat
absolutely class.
It's an interesting situation because he's never discussed when you talk about greatest of all time. No, yet he retired.
Best British of all time. Well,
oh yeah, yeah, of
sure.
He is, yeah.
46-0.
Of course,
but
he is.
Worldwide, he's not in the conversation. I don't understand why.
Mm. Like,
he did it. He did what you're supposed to do. He retired undefeated.
I think predominantly, though, he boxed in England. I think he only had 2 fights in the United States.
Yeah, but he was on television.
He was
here.
Scared of flying. Apparently,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what, yeah. You should have seen me. I would have sorted that out easy. Scared of flying, but apparently he had a sports psychologist as well who used to work with him, Joe Calzaghe.
Really?
Yeah.
Before, so yes. It had nothing to do with the flying.
No, but back in the day, he used to have a sports psychologist.
So probably one
well.
Of the first guys to do that, then.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I know Tyson did some hypnosis that he told about, spoke about as well.
Oh, yeah. He did some hypnosis when he was a little kid,
yeah.
Which is really weird.
Yeah, it's a bit strange.
Yeah, well, the way he would say that you don't exist, just the task exists. Mm. You step into that man and you break his body down and you're like,
yeah.
Like, man, when you teach that to a 13-year-old?
Yeah, that's fucking...
That's
yeah,
never experienced any love in his whole life.
That's programming. That's a different thing altogether. That's a different thing.
It worked.
Yeah,
is it good?
Did you see him?
You're shaking your head like you don't like it as a hypnotherapist.
Some people can't fight. I'm not going to lie. Some people do come to me and they say, oh, I want to do this. And I know. You know, I know that it's not going to I don't work with everyone because I just think, well, you know, maybe you should do something else. You know who can and who can't. You know that.
Well, you're right. What is the difference, though? I mean, we all know when people can or can't.
I think it's with fighting, with kind of everything
yeah, I agree. That's difficult.
I think it's a thing where it's so glamorous to see someone like him. You see Liam Harrison, you see him smash pads, and you see him. But the actual physicality of the pain, of the nerves, of all the shit you have to go through. I think that is, as men, we want to be like, yeah, fucking old, blah, blah, blah. But when you actually have to go through that, there's a difference in this. There's some, you'll go where other people won't go. In his mind or through the pain and stuff like that. And I think it's very difficult for people to actually comprehend, men, especially when they think that being a man is defined by that. That's what my opinion is, you know, instead of wanting to be the, you know, the soldier or whatever mm-hmm. it is, you know.
Well, it's also that people have physical limitations. Like, that's one of the reasons why Malignaggi is so interesting to me, because he's clearly got a physical limitation. His body is mm-hmm. not the most stout body. He doesn't have the best frame. He doesn't have... You know, he doesn't have the best genetics. He just doesn't.
No, he's never had that knockout punch ever.
No, I mean, even he doesn't look like an athlete.
No.
You know, he's just smart as fuck and figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, like, Yard, Jesus Christ, you look at him at the weigh-in, and you're like, that guy's a fighter. Yeah. He looks like an athlete.
Fucking animal.
Yeah. You know, Canelo looks like an athlete.
Well, then Danny Bill didn't, did he? Yeah, Danny Bill didn't look like an athlete, but he was fucking skill level was insane, so...
Yeah, there's some guys that just aren't physically impressive looking, like Chavez, who's never physically impressive looking. No. But he'd break you down. He was such a beautiful fighter to watch because his style, this relentless fucking move forward style, rip the body, and he never gave you any air. You didn't have any air.
It was just, and he never did pads.
Didn't even know how to hit the fucking speed bag.
Yeah. Really?
They didn't do any pads.
They had him hit the speed bag once. It was hilarious. He was going to the speed bag like this. It's like, and laughing. Like, haha. It's like, to his, like, no one's head's on a fucking swivel.
What did he do?
Why am I
hitting
this thing? Sparring hit the bags.
He never did pads. He only did pads when he went to Emmanuel Stewart, and that was for the rematch against, who did he lose to?
Frankie Randall.
Yeah, yes. Frankie the Surgeon Randall.
Yeah.
I remember I watched that because I didn't really smoke weed, but I watched that stoned and I was watching it. I said,
why?
I don't know why I don't smoke weed.
No, why'd you watch it stoned? What
because
happened?
me and my mate was stoned one night. Oh, fuck it. And then he said, oh, Chavez is on. And I was like, I don't know, he's fighting because it was before internet and all that sort of business. And then when he got dropped, what I did notice, because Chavez got dropped with the right hand, all the Mexicans jump up and go, put their hands on the face and went, fucking hell, he's got to drop me, mate. Went, did he? Fuck. And then the rest is history.
Well, Randall had that timing, man, with that right hand. Yep. He really knew how to time it.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And he just had his number. And it was also the perfect storm of Chavez at the end of his rope, you know, long career, like had a lot of wars. And that style was so...
How many fights did he have as well?
I think he went 87 unbeaten. Yeah, but he didn't beat Pernell Whittaker. No 87. He didn't beat Pernell Whittaker that time when it was a draw.
No, it was. God that rest was horse soul. Shit. Yeah, that was horse shit. Pernell Whittaker was a special talent, man. He was special. Like,
talk about awareness.
Oh, my God. Mm. Defensively, he was just genius. Well, that whole 1984 Olympic team, like, holy shit.
Awesome.
I mean, think about how good that team was. Vander Holyfield, Pernell Whittaker, Meldrick Taylor, Mark Breland, Tyrell Biggs.
Yeah.
I mean, what a talented group of people that came out of that Olympic team.
Yeah, they've been incredible.
I never realized they were all on the same team that year.
Yeah, man.
They say that it was an easier run for them because the Cubans didn't go to the Olympics that year. But I mean, even so, they'd beat him in the World Championships anyway. But if you watch Meldrick Taylor, in the World Championships, he gets dropped and has a scrap in that. So it was in him anyway. He had that dog in him. That dog.
Well, he was so slick. You know, I mean, that guy was as slick as they come.
Mm.
He got hit by a fucking car.
I know, that's so sad.
Oh, God.
I knew he did like a drink, I was told, so.
Was he hammered when he got hit?
I don't know, but I did hear that he did like a drink. But I remember him watching Harold Brazier, and he slipped side to side, got round him and slapped him on the arse and walked off. How the fuck do you do that?
Yeah.
I mean, the proper men who can fight properly. And he was so gifted, man.
Yeah, there's only a few guys that were capable of humiliating you like he was. Him and Roy. Roy was Roy Jones when in his prime was capable of humiliating people. When he put his hands behind his
back that time. Yeah. That was
Glenn Kelly won it. Yeah, Australian guy.
Well, I still think against Vinny Pazienza, it's the only round in CompuBox history where the opponent didn't score a single punch. Which is insane. Hmm. And because he was fighting a world champion.
Yeah. But especially someone aggressive like that was going to be throwing as well.
God damn, he was good.
And then he left uppercut, right uppercut, and he stepped aside, left uppercut, and just finished. And Vinny Pazienza was rock hard. Nigel Benn's fighting again.
I know.
Oh, sorry. How old is he?
He's 80,000 years old.
850,000 years old.
I think he's 55.
Really? 55, 54, yeah.
How is he doing?
Who's he going to fight?
I've heard it's Saki Obika.
Really?
John Wayne Parr lost to him.
Yeah, I remember him. And Bika is how old?
Don't know. Don't know.
He's probably in his 40s.
Roy Jones, 40, Roy, yeah, I think Roy Jones knocked him out, didn't he? Saki Obika, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and I know thing he fought boxing as well, Joe Calzaghe.
Is there any see if there's footage of Nigel Benn training recently. Like, I want to know what his body looks like. 55, man.
He's in shape, though, but I mean...
But you remember that fight with Gerald McClellan way back in the day, back when he used to have the dreads.
Yeah.
And that was like the defining fight where people realized, like, oh, God, a guy who's the elite of the elite, like Gerald McClellan...
Everyone were terrified of him as well.
Brain damage. Yeah.
Well, that's why I got into hypnosis for boxing and sport, is because Nigel Benn, after he fought Gerald McClellan, he said, I'd like to thank Paul McKenna for hypnotizing me and making me believe in myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I went to an evening with Nigel Benn, and I said, I got into the job, the career that I do now through you. So your influence.
Well, he certainly needed it in that fight.
Yeah.
That belief in himself.
If that had got stopped in round one when he fell out of the ring, no one would have complained. No one would have complained.
Yeah, it could have easily been stopped. McClellan was a murderer. Oh, he was a monster, a murderer. Mm. Is this day one back?
He posted this on his Instagram.
Let's see. Oh, shit. Damn. He looks fucking great.
Fuck's sake. All these old guys make me feel like shit, man.
Yeah, me.
That's crazy.
Except me.
But the only thing is, can he hold a shot at that age? Do you know what I mean?
Well, he looks fucking great. And like when you watch him throw punches.
You see him with Ricky Hatton on pads.
Look at the speed, man. At 55, that's crazy.
And he could punch hard as well, couldn't he? So he's still carrying a bit of snap in them shots, which it looks like he is.
I need you to piss into this cup, sir.
We're buying into it, though, aren't we? I'm not watching it.
Coming from someone who's on TRT, I ain't buying it. That's amazing, man. That really is another video of him. Let me see here. So they're working on some combinations here. But, I mean, it don't look bad at all. Like, if someone told you that guy was 30, someone told you that guy was 30, you'd be buying it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that he's able to maintain that speed.
Yeah, he's got a son called Conor Benn who boxes as well. He's at welterweight. He's unbeaten as well.
55 is old, though, man. That's fucking old.
He used to be fighting another man like that type of...
Yeah. The only thing that I would think is, well, one thing going for him is that he did not fight for a long-ass time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to see what he looks like without a shirt on, too. That sounded gay. But it's not... I'm just purely as a person and analyzing athletes.
But even back when he did used to fight, all his fights were crazy wars. So do you ever, I know you've had a long time off, but do you ever recover from that?
Right. And how much do you recover when you get hit? Is it all come right back? I mean, he last fought, I want to say 15 years ago. How long has it been?
The last time he fought was against Steve Collins.
What year was
he lost?
That?
He lost
about 20 years ago.
20 years ago,
Fucking
because he's been in. He's heavily into the church and beliefs and systems like that.
Okay.
Him and his wife. I think her name's Caroline. They live in Australia.
Yeah, because he used to be right a bit party animal, didn't he? Back in the day, in his book and that, it says he'd have a fight and then he'd go out on a Friday night and he wouldn't come back home till Monday. He used to do DJing and stuff like that, so he was popping pearls and doing all sorts out all weekend, and he wouldn't stop until the promoter rang him and said, "Right, you've got a fight in 10 weeks."
Yeah, and he used to smoke 20 cigarettes a day.
Then he'd stop and then go back into camp straight away.
But his hands are like that. I've met him and I've been picture with him. His hands are like that big. Mm. He's massive. His hands are huge.
That certainly helps.
Yep.
but what I'm seeing there that's so shocking is his speed.
Yeah.
That at 55, he's still got that kind of speed.
And he eats what he wants, he says. So I eat what I want. I don't eat anything.
He's not on a good diet?
No, he says, I eat what I want, what I feel like. But he trains all the time.
Wow.
Like, runs like 10 miles a day and,
But I'm interested.
It's got me going now. Me and you, I'm not watching that. And they were like,
I'm a little confused though when he says he eats whatever he wants. He's not following a good diet. Like, I would imagine that if you're going to be at, like, Bernard Hopkins late in his career, like, he was an anomaly, but you attributed it to his discipline.
Yeah.
When you know
he lived the life.
Yes.
Unlike anyone else, didn't he? Yes. Once he got started.
I wonder, I mean, if Nigel's not doing that, how the fuck is he able to?
I mean, he might be doing it now, but what he said, he looked well, and if he's fighting for a fight camp, yeah, he might do it now. But when I've been seeing an interview, he goes, oh, you're fish and chips, Gary, I'm not bothered, you know? And he's like, he eats what he wants, doesn't he?
His fight with Eubank, like, what got me into like boxing, that first fight, one of the best fights things I've ever seen.
I hated Eubank forever because of
that. I loved him as well.
I hated him.
Eubanks was a great fighter.
Oh, he was a great fighter, yeah.
You know, it's just it's so weird to see a guy come back at 55. It's so confusing.
I don't understand what for. I mean, but he's obviously
bored. Boredom, yeah.
Fucking bored. Yeah. And obviously, he can still crack.
Yeah.
You know, that's he probably's like, I can think I can do this.
Yeah. I'd probably be like that, though. If I got to that age and I hit the pad, I thought, you know what? That felt all right.
Yeah, I'm thinking of you then, Vinny,
I'm coming back.
I'll be lying in old people's home. Yeah. With Alzheimer's. Ooh, he's coming back.
You know? Yeah, you can see the wheels spinning already. You know what?
I can't wait till I'm dead old.
Who's the oldest ever guy who came back in Muay Thai?
My fucking cousin Andy Alson. He's had about 10 comebacks, but he's 40 and he's coming back again. But I don't know, oldest. But he retired about 5 times.
How does he look?
He's 40. He's my pad man. You'll probably see me on Instagram with him. He's the one who's always holding the pads for me and stuff. So he's still in good shape because he's always training with me all the time. But he's literally retired. How many times? 5.
He's fucking insane.
Honestly, I'll have to send you one of his fights, mate. You've never seen it.
I was in Japan with him and he fought against Torado.
With 5 knockdowns in a minute and a half.
Dropped him. And I was like, dropped him again. And then I got back into the corner and I said, you all right? He went, my foot's broke. I went, jumps out the fight. He said, nah, fuck it, I'll kick him with it anyway.
Jesus.
And he went out, and then the next round there were 5 knockdowns in a minute and a half. So Andy dropped the kid twice, ran in to finish him, then got knocked down 3 times himself and lost on point.
Oh my God.
He did people with body shots and we worked on his counter left hook and it worked sweet.
Yeah.
And it was as if he went, hey, it fucking worked. I'll do it again and again and again. And then he just got caught.
Went to the well too many times.
Yeah.
You saw the Stipe DC fight, Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier?
Yes. The body shots, yeah.
When was the last time you saw that many beautiful left hooks landed to the body in an MMA fight?
In MMA, it's unheard of, really, isn't it, for something like that?
And the way he was landing it was so clean. Yeah. But so short, too, you know? It was no, wind-up and craziness. It was just, bah!
Yeah,
just digging into the body. Pop.
Round 4 that as well. Round 4 when he started doing it as well. So when you're already tired as well, that just pop.
Our friend was crying over that, wasn't he?
Oh, it was hard to watch DC get beat up. But
he seems a good guy. Anyway.
He's a great guy. He's a beautiful person. But for me, there was also part of me that was very happy for Stipe because Stipe was denied. They weren't even talking about him fighting again for the title. He was the fucking most successful UFC heavyweight champion ever. 4 times defended it, or, 4 victories in title fights. Won the fight against Fabricio Werdum, KO'd him in Brazil, won the title, then defended the title 3 times. So he won 4 world championship bouts. Nobody had ever done that before in the heavyweight division because it's such a crazy division. Yeah. It's so easy to get knocked out. And then he goes and loses, and then no one's talking about a rematch. How were you not talking about a rematch? They were talking about him fighting Brock Lesnar. It's like, guys, I know there's a lot of money in Brock Lesnar fighting, but get the fucking right to the title.
Yeah.
When this guy defended the title 3 times.
No one else had done.
He was the man. And then he proved that was the case. And he comes back and beats DC in the rematch. So good for him to get that shot and then to capitalize on it. And he's the greatest heavyweight of all time.
Yeah, one of my clients has just signed for UFC, Chai Mills. Yeah, not Chai Mills, what's his name?
Chai Perry?
Chai.
His name's Chai. Know your fucking clients.
I know. It's fucking. Is it that weird in there? It's that big cloud of weed we just had to walk through. I forgot who I am.
You walked through it, though. You didn't even smoke it. Do you mean Chai Perry Lewis?
Yes. Yeah, Chai Perry Lewis. He's just
okay, the kickboxer from Glory.
He's
a dangerous man.
Yeah, he's such a sweet human being.
They said that about Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez, though. He's your clients now as well.
Eddie Alvarez
is a great guy. Yeah.
And I was so happy when he won. So happy because we did some work and I said to him, watch Ricky Tikitavi, which is a story about a mongoose fighting 2 snakes. And it's a metaphor. It's a really cool metaphor if anyone wants to watch it on YouTube. It's a 1975 cartoon. It's a story by Rudyard Kipling. And it's just lots of metaphors as to not going down certain areas because these snakes were, like, going to kill this monkey. It's a long story. People want to watch it. It's good. And I told him about that and then did some work with him and stuff like that. And he's such a nice guy.
He's a great guy.
Such a nice guy.
And, you know, him going over to 1FC was a gigantic deal. You know, former UFC champion in his prime, heads over to 1FC after a win streak in the UFC. But that Timothy Nastiukin guy is no fucking joke.
Yeah, they don't fuck around.
That guy is a straight-up murderer. He's a murderer, man.
He is.
I was super impressed with him. I'm like, how many guys like that are out there that the general public maybe is not aware of, but they're elite world-class talent?
There's a lot on that one roster as well. Yeah. And when I look at them, I think, fucking hell.
That's what's scary, crazy dude. About going over there.
Yeah.
Because you're going over there, like, if you're a guy from the UFC, if you say, literally, if you're a Conor McGregor or someone like that, and you're a world champion, you're known throughout the land, everybody knows you, guess what? They might have somebody over there that can fucking murk you.
Yeah.
100%. There's so many of them.
Badass Russians.
Yep.
Yeah, so many. He said that as well, but he said, oh, he's a third world guy, he's got nothing to lose. And I said, but you've got first world experience. So you've got first world experience, he hasn't. And when he won, I was at Super Pro Samui in Thailand where I go training, and I went, fucking yes! And it was about 11:30 at night, and all the lights come on, you know, where people are fighters and that looking out the doors. I was like, it's all right. Mm-hmm. But I was so happy he won, because he's such a good guy.
He's a great guy. And that style that he has, like, holy shit. Like, if there's ever been more a blood and guts fighter, you know? And the fact that he was able to persevere against Justin Gaethje in that fucking crazy war, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That kid is hilarious to watch. Gaethje, in the best way. He's
Cowboy.
Cowboy.
Fuck, that kid's violent.
Is he going to fight McGregor then? Is that what they reckon?
Oh, please. Yeah. Please, gods of fight. Please let that happen.
Is that happening on 14th of December, McGregor? Because he put something underneath Dublin 14th of December, didn't he? So is that his
comeback? I thought he was going to box, I heard.
Oh, God knows.
McGregor?
Yeah, he's going to box some other Irish kid that they've got beef with.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, yeah.
Look, he might get knocked the fuck out in that. That would ruin everything. I think a fight versus Gaethje would be the fight to make right now. There's two big fights to make in the lightweight division. It's Justin Gaethje versus Conor McGregor, which is huge, and then it's Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson.
That's the fucking fight.
That's number one. If I had to give all my blessings to the gods, like, for one, I said, please,
Nurmagomedov, got to happen, that one.
Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson, please, please.
I'm not really versed in MMA sort of, you know, things that they do and stuff, but even I, who's not educated in any way, shape or form, I've been kickboxing, Thai boxing and stuff, but I watched that Khabib and I can't help but fucking go, wow. Because when he got back to the corner, Pettis got to the corner, I like to listen to what they're saying to him, and he said, I can't keep him off. He said, I can't get him off me.
You mean Tony Ferguson?
Khabib.
Against Pettis?
Against Pettis.
No, he didn't fight Pettis.
No, Khabib didn't fight recently.
Pettis. No, Tony Ferguson fought Pettis, and then Khabib fought Dustin Poirier.
I apologize. Yeah, well, that's obviously not often, is it? But Khabib's last fight, and he went back to the corner. He said, "I can't get him off me."
Yeah,
he's just so fucking strong.
The thing is with a Ferguson fight, though, well, it has to happen now because surely he ain't got many left in him doing what he does. Surely he can't.
He only wants two more fights.
Yeah, there you go. Then,
I think the plan is Tony Ferguson and then George St. Pierre.
Right.
That's big money. Yeah. Come on,
there
man.
There you go. Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest money of all time.
What weight would he fight?
I don't know.
St. Pierre.
George thinks he can get to 55.
155. Well, yeah. I'm sure I've read somewhere on the internet that he'd done like a mock weight cut and got himself right down, and I saw that before, and he looked in decent shape.
George is smart as fuck. He's so intelligent.
And I remember him being on here talking about how intermittent fasting has changed all his life and all his. I remember that.
If he thinks he can do it, he can do it. I mean, he wouldn't even be considering it if he didn't. And, you know, he's also training with Kevin Lee now. Kevin Lee's up there training at 155, and, you know, he's decided to go back down to 155 as well.
He's a nice guy.
He's a great guy. Did you work with him?
A little bit, but he was bouncing around to find out where he was settling the most.
Yeah.
So I kept in contact with him just to keep, not really to do anything, but just keep my eye on him. You all right? How's it going? You know, just encouragement, really.
So we'll see what
happens in the future with him.
But I think if anything trips him up at all, it's like he has this belief that he's the best, and that belief doesn't get shaken by losses, but it also doesn't seem like he makes the proper adjustments. That's why I recommended he goes to Furuasahabi.
Yeah.
I'm like, listen, man, if there's ever a guy who could put – I still think he could be a world champion. I really do. But I think Furuasahabi is the guy to really hone his skills properly, because who did he bring to the world title? George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
Who does Kevin Lee fight like? George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
If there's one guy he fights like, he's like unpredictable whether the attack's going to be striking or wrestling, mixes it up beautifully. Who does that better than George St. Pierre? Nobody. He's the best ever at it. Yeah, and Kevin Lee does that style.
His last fight, St. Pierre, it's been his last fight. Because I would expect him to just punch his lights out like that.
Yeah.
Like how he did, and just, he really.
Well, Bisping had a bunch. He had issues going into that fight. He had a real problem with his ribs. Like, he was in the bathroom about to shoot lidocaine into his rib cage.
Really?
And he was going to have his doctor on FaceTime. And he just decided, like, the problem was if he fucked up the injection, he could attempt. Punctured his lung.
Fucking
and if he punctured his lung, he was like, fuck, what am I doing here? You know, so he decided not to do it. But he, in the bathroom, had his fucking, he talked about it, had his doctor on FaceTime, and he was going to, like, lidocaine his ribs. So he decides not to do that. And he also, the reality is, he had one eye. His right eye is fucking blind. He can't see anything. And George knew it. So George stepped to that side, and that's where he caught him with that left hook. Okay, and
blindsided.
Literally blindsided. I mean, look, Bisping is as tough as a fucking human being has ever been.
Yeah.
He is a warrior. But by that time he got to that fight, goddamn, that guy had been through the ringer. Been through the ringer.
Another one that deserves what he got. Put the hard work in and took his licks.
Yeah, and he got there through mental toughness.
Yeah.
He's as mentally tough as any fucking human being that's 100%. Ever lived.
Because when he fought Silver as well, when that knee, in the knee, the jumping knee as well, because everyone thought that was done.
Then he wins the next round.
Yep, there you go.
Look, Silver walked away like it was a KO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really it was a kind of a cheap shot because his mouthpiece was out, and he was saying, hey, look, put my fucking mouthpiece out, we're separated. And then Silva's like, check this out. Dunk.
Yeah.
Just catches him, you know?
And to come back like he did from that, and still we won the fight as well. Yeah. So.
Did a little bit with him as well, Mike Bisping.
Flying knees in MMA is like when one lands, you know, you're seeing guys land them now. Like the Masvidal fight with Ben Askren is the best example of all time. Like, god damn. But in Muay Thai, that is so rare.
It's hard to land it clean in Muay Thai as well. I've tried myself quite a lot of times when I've been fighting. It's hard to land a clean one to the face. You see, like the Dutch, what Vinny were on about earlier, they've got it down because what they do is they unload with the hands, make you cover tight,
right,
and then drive it straight through middle of your guard. Mm-hmm. So they've got it down to an art then. But like for an actual flying jumping one, like right across the ring, it is hard to land in Muay Thai.
Jordan landed one on Borkal though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Classic picture.
Yeah. There's just so in MMA, it's like you never know if a guy's going to shoot. And with wrestlers, that desire to go and dive on your legs and then boom, you get caught with that flying knee.
That Masvidal one was scandalous.
It's him versus Diaz.
I remember watching your reaction on thing as well.
Fucking 5 seconds. Yeah. But, you know, when you realize that he planned for that and that he actually set it up by moving to his right to force Ben to definitely lead with that left leg forward. I mean, he really went to that side and then came at him. So Ben's instinct, he couldn't avoid it.
Yep.
It's like, that's his thing, is to get a hold of you. And like, here it's right on him, and then bang, that knee comes right up the middle. Yeah. God damn.
Out, wasn't it? It was just
god damn.
And then he got another one in.
And all the shit talking that went on before that fight, that was just a devastating loss.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Big time.
He's coming back really quickly against Damian Maia.
Right.
And that's an interesting fight because Damian Maia is a fucking strangler.
Yeah. He had a bad KO as well, right? Just got stopped.
He was out badly when he was KO'd.
It was a bad KO, right? So to have him fight just 4 months later, it's like,
brave.
Yeah, and maybe not. I mean, what if Damian Maia decides to stand and bang with him?
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody. Look, Damian Maia can take you out with his hands, no doubt about it. And if anybody is capable of stuffing takedowns or reversing position as a grappler, Damian Maia is a spectacular grappler.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. It's a brave or stupid one or two.
That's a right show, though, isn't it? November the 2nd, Madison Square Garden.
Is that on the card?
Yeah, I don't know, but that's a right
show. That's one with Tillman and Masvidal and Diaz.
I don't think Damian Maya and Ben Askren's on that card. I feel like it's on a December card.
Yeah, it should be then if it's
Till versus Gaslam and
Till versus Gaslam.
That's a tough fight, yeah, another tough fight.
So Till's going up. That's it. 185, huh?
We're at my last fight, and I said, mate, you are fucking humongous. I said, what have you been doing? He went, I'm growing. He's still young, isn't he? So he's still, like, filling out into his body.
Yeah, he's getting thicker.
I've got a lot of love for Till because I got love for Sabini because I've known him a long time, but he stood, and all
is
the people.
Is it on that card? No. Oh, it's on the fight night.
Before.
Oh, so is it the main event? Before. Is it the main event of the fight card?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Singapore. Oh, okay, right. Cool. Yeah,
and they all bombarded Till, didn't they? And he stood for an hour and a half having pictures took with all the kids, and he was wicked, man. He was brilliant with the people, wasn't he, in Ireland?
Well, when he got knocked out by Masvidal, that was shocking.
It was. Yeah.
And the way Masvidal did it, again, his fight IQ is so high. Mm-hmm. He's so clever at figuring out how to find your chin.
It's
going to
be a sick fight with him and Diaz.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. God damn, that's going to be a sick fight. If he stops Diaz, then there can be nothing next except for a title
got
fight.
To be.
It has to be. But I'm just very disturbed by this whole Colby Covington situation. Because I guess, you know, he just feels like they're giving him a shitty deal, and then they're trying to set up someone else to fight Usman next. And he's very upset. First of all, he's got a real grief, grievance, because they took his title away. He won the interim title, and they took it away because he wasn't willing to fight immediately afterwards. And he's like, look, I need time. I fought five rounds of fucking war.
Yeah.
Then he comes back and looks incredible against Robbie Lawler. So, like, well, surely now he's going to get the next title fight. And they offered it to him, but they offered it to him as a challenger with, like, challenger money. It's like, hey, I'm the fucking interim champion. I have one loss in the UFC. It was a loss early on in my career. I fought injured and lost. Like, this is I've proven myself. Mm. And he's also puts... People fucking hate that guy, right? But that's by design. I mean, he puts asses in seats, and he puts eyeballs on the screen.
Yeah, either want to see him lose or see him win. It's just one of that other one or the other, isn't it?
You're still going to watch either way.
Like Floyd.
Exactly.
I mean, what Floyd did that's so smart is talk shit, show you his money, and everybody's like, kill him, kill him. And you can't even hit him.
Yeah. It's like, remember 24-7 would convince you that someone really shit might beat him. You're like, 24-7, he's done this and that, he's done loads of other things. Yeah. He's got a chance, this is the one. I'd be like, that's you here.
Yeah. Well, there's also there was moments like Maidana when he clipped him at the end of that one round.
Yeah, we wobbled him a little bit.
You're like, maybe Maidana.
Mosley wobbled him a little bit, didn't he, as well.
But then when Maidana fought him in the rematch, he couldn't even come close.
Nah. And then after that, when Mosley wobbled him in round two of that fight, he just got took to school for the rest of the fight.
He just adjusted like that. Yeah. Third round just went out.
Just woke up, too. You know, Maidana's apparently coming back again.
Yeah, you heard that, yeah. How does he look? He was going to.
I think he stopped again.
He was going to, and then he stopped again. He was training to fight, and then he stopped again.
When did he stop?
I don't know, but I read that he was training to fight, and then he stopped again because
Instagram.
He wasn't training with what's he called? Robert.
Garcia?
Yeah, Robert Garcia.
In Oxnard?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He wasn't training with him. He was training in Las Vegas somewhere, so he went training with him because that's in Oxnard.
Yeah, because he looked like he dropped loads of weight because he put all that Mayweather money weight on, didn't he? He was just loving life. Posting photos up with his guns and cigars and all that shit. Living the dream. But then he'd lost loads, but then I read somewhere as well that he'd stopped and that the comeback were.
Well, that kind of lifestyle, when you only have like one chunk of money and it's just sitting there, you're chewing through that shit every day, buying Rolexes and Cuban cigars, and next thing you'll be like, hey bro, you got about 100 grand left. Like,
oh shit.
Shit.
Get me a sweatsuit.
Yeah.
Putting the 55, we're coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's not too old though. Maidana's probably like 35, 36, right?
Nah,
you got his Instagram? Chino Maidana.
It's from March. It's not recent at all.
Oh, really?
It's March 30th. Yeah. It's just a picture of him in a
go to the room. That's his last Instagram post?
Yeah, that's why I remember looking at it. Then I read after that he'd come back with the stop.
Wow.
Clarence Bones Adams, isn't it? He trained recently at Amir Khan.
Really?
Yeah, Clarence Bones.
Let me see what's going on before that.
Not
March is a long-ass time. Let me see that. That's what I want to see.
2 weeks before that.
But I want to see him hit. He looks thin there, though. That's That's Maidana looking so much better than he looked. I mean, a year ago, he was fat as fuck.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Like Bert Kreischer fat. Damn, he looks good.
Yes, I don't know why the comeback's been...
Well, who knows, man? Who knows? It's hard. It's, I mean, when you're out for so long to decide you're a warrior again and you're, you know, back to being a professional athlete again, like the commitment is so significant.
Yeah, 100%.
Look at that. Go before that.
It's hard enough.
Not that one. That right there. Look at that fat face.
Yeah.
Look at that face. He's so fat. That's a fat face.
It's hard enough when you've had like 2 or 3 weeks off after a tough fight.
Yeah.
In that first couple of weeks back, getting yourself back into eating clean. In the gym every day, getting back into routine of being like,
look at that picture, Jamie, that your cursor's on right now. Look at that. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, pimping.
Smoking cigars, drinking. Hey.
Look at his shoes.
Yeah. But I mean, how much money did he make on those Floyd fights?
A few million.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe 20.
Because the people demanded, didn't it, the second one?
Yeah.
They demanded the second one.
But, you know.
When he beat Broner down, though, that was class, that one.
That was good. That was a good fight.
Yeah, how many people went, fucking.
Yeah,
that guy is so it's so interesting because he had so much potential, but for whatever reason, he's just like stepped on his dick so many times.
Yeah, I think he's.
Oh, look at him! There he was.
Yeah,
there he was at his fattest.
He dropped on here.
Yeah, wow. Man, he got pretty goddamn slim.
He got close to.
But what is he doing now? Doesn't say
that.
Stacks of cash, eating cheesesteaks, having a good fucking time.
But yeah, that was great when he beat Broner in that fight. When Broner got around back of him and fucking did that behind him, and then he did it behind after he knocked him down as well.
Yeah,
he
dropped him twice, and he dropped him think later on as well.
Well, Broner should have been a superstar.
He should.
But his whole. Like the flashy lifestyle.
It's just his choices that he made as well. They're doing stupid shit like fighting in the street in the middle of Las Vegas, stripping stuff, thinking no one's going to see it. And
I think it's too much too soon as well. Yeah. I think you get that much money, you've still got that immature sort of mindset that there's no really around. So, you know, they're so talented, but there's no one around them to either they don't look, no one, they don't get looked after, or they don't listen to who's looking after them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame. Some parts of it is a shame, you know what I mean? And he had slow feet. He didn't have very quick feet.
Well, I think that was his style, was that Philly
that
shell.
And the plodding forward.
That shell style was his...
Well, Pacquiao beat him up, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And then he moaned after that as well.
Well, how crazy. After the Pacquiao fight, he was trying to say that he got robbed. Yeah,
ridiculous.
Like, even his corner was saying he was saying you've got it in the back.
Yeah.
His corner is smart, guys.
That was terrible corner work.
What do you think that was about?
I don't know. Because that wasn't close, in my opinion.
Maybe somebody poisoned them.
Yeah. Blame, blame. A bit of LSD in your drink. Enjoy.
Vinny, what is like when you've worked with so many different people and there's so many different psychological issues that fighters deal with? What do you think is like one of the primary causes, one of the primary things, the psychological missteps that fighters make that you maybe could help them correct?
Things from the past, I think. I think it's down to what goes on in their lives before they may become fighters.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
Because I don't think you can have any relationship with anxiety unless something's triggered it from the past.
Mm.
So I like to go deeper than just the surface. I like to go back and talk to them about the childhood and stuff like that. It seems to work. But the thing is, my job, Joe, it's so interesting. Because everyone's different, you know. One's got the same DNA or the same fingerprints, and everybody's different to work with. So to say one thing would be very difficult. It's just about keeping them where they are completely at one with themselves, or they understand themselves. You know what I mean, and not go down certain avenues of getting carried away. Simple example: Eddie told me that before one of his fights in Mexico City, I think it was. He was like, he just praying, or he was that nervous. He was praying that I want to go to sleep, because his mind was so fucking overactive. And, it's things like that. That's now working with Cody Nolove, Cody Garbrandt.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all so different. They're all so talented and brilliant at what they do, but it's all so different. To nail it down to one thing would be difficult.
But many times it's memories of failure,
Yeah, a reminder, because in the unconscious, this is my belief, and people might argue with it, but I think that you have to have a certain connection with something else in the past to get yourself a reference. It's like, I believe that anxiety is something from the past thought about now projected into the future. You know,
so projected into the future is your ultimately who you are, that defines you,
or projected into the future as in you're going to believe you're going to lose or you're going to do this. So what we've done now is just lead it on to what we've both been doing is I've got a new thing called the Shawman Solution, where people can go interactive website where they can go on videos, and there's like quite a lot of videos of different techniques.
What's the URL?
TheShawmanSolution.com. Yeah, it's not out yet. It'll be out released when this comes out.
Let me know so I can send people there. But
yes, please.
The idea behind it is you can't just do it in one session, right? You need a bunch of – it's like mental training.
That's what pisses me off about fighters.
Yeah,
they get contact me 2 weeks before, help me out, I need help, blah, 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 you know, and or on the fight day. I worked with Molly McCann, who had two fights recently. She won on, but it was I had to stop Starbucks, throw my kids in the thing, and get FaceTime and say blah blah blah. But I have worked with Molly anyway. But people hire me after they lose. Hire me before you lose, so you can you know get the best out of your training and stuff. But I think that's the nature of the job. I think it makes you question yourself when you lose.
Right.
So,
but that can be great.
Yeah, it's great for me.
But I mean, even for them, it can be great to lose because it can give you a wake-up call.
Yeah.
And so many fighters have done their best work after they've lost and made adjustments.
Yeah, true.
Mighty Mouse is a great example.
True.
When Mighty Mouse, he beat Ian McCall, but honestly, that is a real questionable decision. Ian was beating the fuck out of him. Yeah. Ian had his back and he's pounding him in the head. I mean, it was definitely his worst performance. Or one of his worst performances. And then from then on, Mighty Mouse and Matt Hume had a conversation like, hey, you can't just fucking half-ass this anymore.
Yeah.
You got to be all in.
Yeah.
And he became all in and then became the best ever.
Yeah.
I mean, he
looked great as well.
He's amazing. He's amazing. But he got tested in that first fight by a guy that no one in America knew.
They're all over there. They're all waiting, them guys.
Well, they're all like waiting, right? Mm-hmm. Like all these people. Look, you think about how talent arises, right? When you get to be an Anderson Silva, when you step into the UFC and fight Rich Franklin, he's the champion. A lot of people didn't know Anderson Silva was unless you followed him outside the U.S. Mm-hmm. And you'd go, holy fucking shit, is this guy good? This could be crazy. If you saw his Cage Wars fights, like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, he was incredible. Mm. If you saw his fights in Pride, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, his Pride fight, I've seen some of
them. He was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, Anderson, before he got to the UFC, I was letting everybody know, bet the house on this guy.
Yeah.
Like, because this is, he's on a completely different level. But there's a million of those guys out there. There's so many of those guys out there in these other countries that no one's seen. They don't get any press, but they've been lighting people up in these amateur competitions and in the small circuit. And then
just waiting for their chance just to just
like
to,
Timothy Natsiukin. People didn't know who he was until he fought. You see that guy, you're like, Jesus Christ, I like that guy against a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's fucking good.
Dangerous, very dangerous.
Yeah, it doesn't play.
Big guy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also the thing about the no weight cuts at 1FC that makes things very interesting.
Yeah, that was fucking hard. That like, the first time I ever did it. Like, my first fight, for one, I fought way out of my weight class. I got called on 8 days' notice, and I took a fight at, like, 154, which I never fight at.
What do you weigh right now?
Right now, I've been enjoying America, so I'm probably about 160. But when I'm training, like, even... not in fight camp. I'm walking around at about 155, 156. So, and I fight at...
And you will fought 154. What kind of hydration test do they give you guys to make sure that you're not cutting weight?
So, say if we fight on the Saturday, on the Thursday, on the Wednesday, you got weighing on the scales just so they can see what weight you are. It has no meaning on it, on anything. But on the Thursday, you'll have your first weight check. You have to weigh in on weight, hydrated, because obviously they'll piss test you in like... So you're weighing bang on weight and hydrated. If you fail either, then you're going to have to do it again on the day of the fight. So basically, you're going to have to weigh in three times if you don't do it correctly.
Mm.
So then you do it again on the Friday, weighing hydrated on weight, and then on the Saturday, you can put all your weight back on or whatever you're going to do and fight.
Do they test your body to make sure that you're not cutting any water?
No, they just make sure that, like, just check your piss. Just basically, they put, like, a little thing in it just to check how hydrated it is.
Oh,
so
okay.
if you're under 250, you're good. Anything over 250, that's a fail.
Interesting. So they'll know that you're dehydrated then.
Yeah.
So your weight is not representative of your actual weight if you're healthy.
Yeah, basically.
So by making you do it several times, they're saying, like, this, we know what you are.
Yeah, and you're not going to, like, go weigh in and then put on 25, 30 pounds overnight right. and be a giant the next day. Do you know what I mean? So it's going to, you're both going to be same size.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Why doesn't the UFC do that? Why doesn't everybody do that?
I don't know.
Because it's the grossest thing in fighting is the weight cut.
Yeah.
Because it puts guys through horrendous internal damage, yeah. like kidney yeah. damage.
The way the MMA guys do it as well, like me now, when I'm walking around, I will be 7-8 pounds. Like, that's, you know, they're losing 20 pounds like in a week yeah. of a fight and stuff like that. It's crazy.
Well, with grappling, it's such a giant advantage.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to lay on someone and...
So
yeah.
big. Such a huge advantage. If you can actually regain your strength, and because of the real experts like George Lockhart, guys mm-hmm. are really good at getting guys mm-hmm. rehydrated and weighing you in, sucking all that water out of your body, and then putting it back it's slowly a science and correctly.
Now, really.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
And if you understand that science.
Mm.
But it's just, to me, it's the most heartbreaking part of MMA is to watch those guys like with their faces sucked in like zombies.
They can
barely
even stand on scales yeah. and stuff like getting lifted on a scale. I've been like that before in fights. And I thought to myself, fuck it, I never want to do that ever again. I'd rather just diet and yeah. let them be a little bit bigger than me. But now, if I finish my career with 1FC, I never have to worry about that again.
That's great. I just think that's the smartest way to go. I really wish everybody would do that. I mean, I think it's legal cheating. Legalized cheating.
I agree.
Like you say, if you've got like someone who's lost 5 pounds and then someone who's lost 20 pounds and the next day they're putting 30 pounds on, which is just crazy.
Vinny, are you seeing a rise in people that take this mental training seriously and take things like mindset training seriously?
Yeah. And in different sports as well. Thank you for having us on here, because it does get us a lot of attention, doesn't it? So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Thank you, brother.
And thank you for hypnotizing me. And now I know it's real.
Yeah. You know what? That was the worst, most nerve-wracking hypnotherapy I've ever done in my fucking life.
Why?
Well, imagine it. If I hypnotized you and it didn't work, I'd have to sit here for 2 hours going, that was shit. You're a prick.
Well, I treated it with respect, and I treated it with full attention, and I didn't go into it skeptically. I went into it with an open mind, you know, and it's real. It's like, I tried to explain the state of mind that you achieve when you're hypnotized. It's very hard to describe, you know, without experiencing it, because it's different than any other state of mind that I've ever had, but you are awake. That's the other thing that weirds people out. They think, oh, you're in another world. You're in dreamland. He's going to take your pants off. You're not even going
to
know.
And it's not a power over either.
No.
And I'm carrying on continuing to learn more. I'm learning quantum linguistics and time, space, matter, and energy with Colin Mackay, who's an amazing guy with linguistics. I trained with Bob Burns. I went down to Scotland.
When you say linguistics, you mean by using special words, language, words and combinations?
Yeah, and listening to how people's language patterns are. A lot of hypnotherapists now on my on Instagram and stuff, they're all like, sleep, hey, look at me, and blah, 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 and you're out, and I don't like that. I can do that. But I there's more subtle ways of doing it, and I've been working with different people. Bob Burns,
but what do you mean when you're saying linguistics? You mean like people using like negative language to stop,
and language that to try and get them out of the model of the world, so inside to try and move them through their model of the world or their understanding of what they think their problem is. So once you think about a problem, and then if you linguistically guide them, when they go back to it, it's not the same.
When you keep saying linguistically, like, give me an example. Like, why do you...
Words. So, like, using, like, inside a problem, outside of your control, when you're above it, instead of feeling like it's on top of you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not completely au fait with it yet, because I'm still learning it, advanced linguistics with him. And you can see the changes in people, that they start to question or consider it. And I think a lot of hypnotherapists don't listen. I listen intently and think, that doesn't make sense. I mean, you do in your work. You have to listen to people and to get what they're where they're coming from, and then ask them questions. When you start questioning the belief of what the problem is, it changes.
Hmm. Interesting. What did you experience when you first started doing it?
Well, I did it after I'd lost a fight, which we were on about earlier. I were a bit skeptical, but I knew Vinny did it. I knew he was good at his job. But I've always thought, like, well, I'm that strong in my own mind. I don't ever need anything like this. But then when I were having the rematch with a guy who just beat me, and not only beat me, smashed me to fucking pieces. First time that had ever happened, and they were getting brought to England and we were fighting in one of the biggest stadiums in England in front of everyone. So I thought, why not go use Vinny and try and make my mind as strong as my body's going to be? Can't ever be over-prepared. So I thought, I'll just try and do both.
And what was the difference? Like, what was the adjustment?
So I trained as hard as I always do. I trained the same for every fight, but I went to see Vinny and we did. We talked about it in the last one. We instilled some code words into my head. Like one of them was warrior, and my coach and a few others were saying that in the corner, and Vinny were commentating at the time. And I remember him saying in round two, I heard him outside the ring. He went, "Oh, Liam Harrison's a warrior." And I remember in that just like triggering. He stopped me in the first fight because he smashed my legs to pieces. He hurt me every time he hit me. In the second fight, I didn't get hurt once. It was like I was in a bit of a trance state, really, because my concentration levels were just like through the roof and everything just worked perfectly for that fight. It was weird to explain how it worked, but it did clearly.
We did some work recently as well. Because he felt like he was having a dip in his whatever way he was thinking. So we did some work recently, and he even said the other day that he's getting his best performances now, because you can forget it, and you know. And
well, mindset is so important to anything that's difficult.
Massive.
Like you go into it with like a wishy-washy mindset, yeah, and you're not going to have your ultimate the best performance.
Well, look 100%. At David Goggins. I mean,
yeah,
yeah.
You know, he's
that's like, all about
that's where
mind.
He's going,
yeah,
and that's where he's going, and that's it. Your body can scream, and he's
his
off.
Instagram is so fucking
love
important
it.
For people.
I love it.
It's so important for people because you realize that, like, he's saying these gems of wisdom, but he's actually doing it.
Yeah,
you know, he's doing it. He's not just some. There's a lot of these motivational speaker guys out there that can go fuck themselves because all they're doing is like giving you motivational speaking, but they're not doing anything.
He's up there doing it. He's running in front of the camera.
It.
Yeah, it's fucking class. That.
He's
I love
doing
it.
I
love it.
Yeah, I mean, he's telling you stories about like mental toughness while he's running. There's something undeniably effective about that.
He's better than some idiot just stood on a stage saying, "Oh, we'll do this, this, and this, and this will happen." And he's there doing it in front of you.
It's evidence.
Yeah.
People need evidence.
And
know,
his book is excellent, man.
I've read it. And the audio book's good as well.
Fuck. The audio book's even better than the book because you get to hear him talking about each individual chapter, like on these unreal stories in between the chapters. Like, the book is great. The audio book is better.
Remember, imagine him hunting you. You've got no fucking shelter. You just go, like, "Find me, you found
He's
me."
He's never
going
to get tired. He's going to keep
going
forever.
It's like Terminator, isn't it? It's like T-1000.
But it's just important to know that there are people like that out there that are going to take it to the top level of human physical potential. You know, and that's what he's doing. And there's a lot of those guys out there, like my friend Cam Haynes, like the Courtney Dowalter. There's people that can do shit. That, like, you have this idea of, like, physical limitations. Everybody does.
Well, they lead ways, don't they? I mean, Roger Bannister did it, didn't he? He broke the 4-minute mile, and then everyone else started doing it. Wim Hof.
Yeah.
But what I like about this show and like about you is you give people understandings of things that you wouldn't really look into, like David Sinclair, Matthew Walker, you know, these people that give us information and that.
Yeah.
It's invaluable, man, to us and to everybody else.
Well, to me too, man. I'm very fortunate that I have this platform and these guys are willing to come and tell us about these things because it's just, you could learn so much that just was not available to us when we were kids. It didn't exist. There was no outlet like we have now with podcasts.
Yeah, Elon Musk, all them guys.
It's incredible.
There's so many people that are thankful to you for what you do. Us, and thank you, man.
I'm thankful to them. I'm thankful to you guys, too. And I enjoy this conversation
thank
as well.
Sir.
We did it. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Anything to say? Anything, plugs? Anything before
just
we go?
Just to plug the Watchers group that have been had a seminar of mine the other day, Zach Foldman and Chase Hero. And look at working with them at the moment. They're two guys.
In this mindset training thing?
Yeah, the mindset training thing.
So what's the URL going to be and when's it going to be live?
They just have a Watchers group.
Your thing.
Oh, mine, I apologize. Yeah. The Shawman Solution.
And when is that going to be available?
That's going to be available when this show is finished.
Right. At the end?
Yes.
Okay.
My website's up and running now if anyone wants to learn any Muay Thai. It's an online course, over 300 technique videos on there, liamharrisontraining.com.
Beautiful. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Joe.
Sir.
Fun times.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
Woo!
Love you, Joe.